All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and light me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel all right. I feel all right tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from.
All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here till 4 a.m. We continue the show, and it is a Wednesday. It'll be Wednesday after midnight, obviously. It'll be Wednesday. So we have themes that we do for the music bumps. You pick the music that we listen to coming back from the news and coming back from breaks, and we have a night, every morning, and it is Wild Card Wednesday. Wild Card Wednesday means you pick any song, any artist, anything wild card, and we will play it. And so you select the songs every morning on the show, and it's Wild Card Wednesday, so anything goes. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk, text, and Wild Card Wednesday requests. So on the show tonight slash this morning, my old friend Dmitry Samarov is going to join us. He is an artist and an author, and he's got a new book out called Soviet Stamps, which kind of is an autobiographical memoir about how he became an artist. He also has a book called Music to My Eyes, which is a collection of stories and about the music that he's seen live and the sketches that he does while watching concerts. It's fascinating stuff. He's been doing that for years. Very talented guy, and he has been on the show many times, but he hasn't been here for a while, so we're having him back on. And then Lindsey Cochran, our old friend from Great Moments in Vinyl, is going to join us, and he's going to be here live in studio and on the phone. We will have Dan Engine Throne, and they are doing a show. Great Moments in Vinyl, for people who don't know, Great Moments in Vinyl is a band that is put together by our friend Lindsey Cochran. He gets some of the best musicians in the city together, gathers them together, and they pay tribute to many great artists. They've been doing this for years. They play full albums and all kinds of great stuff. So, Dan and Lindsey are going to be part of the Great Moments in Vinyl play Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs, the classic Derek and the Dominoes album that was released in 1970. It is a classic record featuring, obviously, Eric Clapton on guitar and much more. So they're going to play Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs. So we're going to talk about that classic album and talk about some of the things that they've got coming up, as well as the concert that they're going to do, paying tribute to Layla and other assorted love songs. So there you go. Today in history, I should say tomorrow, the 22nd, in history, was the day that the Apple's 1984 commercial debuted. And it's amazing how it's kind of been, you know, drilled into our subconscious. But it seems like it's been aired, you know, a lot more than just once. But it was only aired that one time during the Super Bowl. It was only aired on television once, and yet the impact that it made, you know, is still really unbelievable. So we're going to talk about that, the classic 1984 Apple commercial, and we're going to talk about the greatest commercials of all time. You know, the Super Bowl is coming up, so we always talk about the Super Bowl commercials, but let's do a little prep here and talk about some of the greatest commercials of all time, commercials that you love, and even, you know, the latest commercials that are out there that you like. There's a falling iguana alert issued in Florida. We've heard about this before. Because of the cold weather, iguanas are falling out all over the place. And then we're going to talk about some of the weirdest weather events of all time. And we might get to the topic of things that we were actually punished for. People have been telling stories about sort of ridiculous things that they were punished for over the years. We have a round of Know Your Onion. Know Your Onion. It is a little game that we play here on the show. Tom Hush is my producer, and he is the host of Know Your Onion. What happens is we open up the phone lines, and you call in, and you become a contestant. And we have two contestants that play separate rounds. And what happens is Tom will read a news headline, and you have to decide whether that headline is real or if it's from the satirical fake newspaper, the comedy newspaper, The Onion. So, you know, the news nowadays is just so weird that it's sometimes very difficult to tell whether a news headline is actually real or from The Onion. And that's what you do. You call in. If you know Your Onion, if you know the difference between a fake news headline from The Onion and a real one, then you win a prize. We also have a Blackhawks Express to play back from tonight's game. Nice to see Q back. That was a very emotional thing to see. Got a nice response from the crowd, obviously. We love the guy. But we'll play back the Blackhawks Express. So that's the stuff that's happening on the show. If at any time you want to jump in, we encourage it at 312-981-7200. That's also the phone number for texts and for your Wildcard Wednesday requests. Let me say officially hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing well, Nick. How are you?
All right. Did you see the return of Q?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. It was very nice to see him. He's looking good.
Yep.
He's looking very very healthy on there. He seems to be happy with the Panthers.
Yep.
So,
and they got a great record. You know,
they do.
They're playing good hockey, you know. I think some of that has to do with their coach.
Yeah, that's the Q effect.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happens when you have him on your team. But, yeah, I mean, the Hawks went on that big run when I was in high school, and it was a totally strange experience because I did not grow up watching the Hawks because they weren't on TV.
Yeah.
And having them come back in a big way and capturing not just the people who were fans before, but a whole new generation of fans, I think the last decade for them has been unbelievable in terms
of
sports stories.
I remember when there was a time when there'd be 3,000 people at the UC. and now every game, 22,000 people show up, which I love. I love that because I've been a hockey fan. I've been a hockey fan my whole life, and I love the Blackhawks, and I love I remember going the old days at the old Chicago Stadium. It was nuts to go to Hawks games, nuts, and that energy is kind of back. So, but yeah, it was nice to see Quenneville back in town. That was as a Hawks fan, it was nice to see that, and so we miss him though. I got to say, I'll be honest with you, I miss the guy. So anyway, so we'll play back that Blackhawks Express, all kinds of really great stuff coming up on the show, and you should be a part of it at 312-981-7200. And all right, we're going to continue the show with Dmitry Samarov. He is in the PPG Paints green room, which is a beautiful green room here on the 18th floor at 303 East Wacker, the PPG Paints green room. And Dimitri's in there right now, and we'll get him, and we will talk to him. And so coming up, Dmitry Samarov, as the show continues right here on 720 WGN. You're so sweet. Nick DiGiulio Show continues here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline Studio. It'll be Wednesday after midnight, so Wildcard Wednesday. That's where you every night and every morning of the show, you pick the music that we play coming back from commercials and news. So the theme this morning is Wildcard Wednesday. So that means any artist, any song, anything. Request now at 312-981-7200. And let's continue with the show here. I'm about to welcome back to the studio a person I haven't seen in a while, Dmitry Samarov, who is an artist and a writer and the author of some books. His latest is called Soviet Stamps, and he'll be in conversation with Kyle Beachy, author of The Slide, at City Lit Books on Thursday, January 30th. That's one of the events we're going to talk about. Plus, it's been a while since I've had him on the show, and how are you?
All right. Good to be back.
It's good to see you.
Nice surprise to hear from your producer the other day.
Yeah. Tom was like, hey, when was the last time you had Dmitry on the show? And I'm like, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
So, but you're here.
Yeah.
And we're happy to have you.
That's
so
stuff to talk about.
You've been keeping busy, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, very busy.
Yeah. So you had written Hack, Stories from a Chicago Cab.
Yeah, which came out in 2011.
And then you wrote Where To, A Hack Memoir.
In 2014, published right. in 2014. Yeah.
Right, right.
Which was 2 years after I'd actually quit driving a cab.
Now, that's how you and I met.
Right, yeah.
You drove a cab late at night.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were on late at night.
And you were listening. You found me on the radio.
Correct.
Listened. Yeah. And then sometimes you would just be out front of the Tribune building.
Mm-hmm.
And you would give me a ride, and then we became friends. And
yeah.
I was in the back of your cab many, many times.
Yeah.
yeah. So one of the funny things here I want to tell Tom is, Tom, have you ever seen Andre Konchalovsky's version of The Nutcracker?
I have not had the pleasure.
I recommend it highly. It's a truly insane movie.
Yeah.
And Dimitri and I, we there was like one other person in the theater when we saw it, right?
Yeah.
It was a truly insane movie. But anyway, that was one of my favorite memories. Was we went out to the Rosemont. It was only
playing in the suburbs somewhere.
It was only playing at the Rosemont at the movie co.
With good reason.
And it's a certifiable movie, Tom. Yeah. Like really, really, truly certifiable.
Is it just really like a really dark version of the?
No, it's insane. It's completely insane. John Turturro plays a rat man in it.
Yeah.
It would give children nightmares.
Yeah,
if they
there's no question.
Well, you had me at Rat Man,
and it's one of the Fannings. Which one? L, I think. L
Fanning. I can't even. Yeah, it's
one of the Fannings.
It's wiped from the memory bank.
And you know? Nathan Lane. Here's a thing for you. Nathan Lane plays Einstein in it.
Right.
So yeah, that's and if you can put all that together in some logical way, you're a better man than I am.
Do you think Tchaikovsky originally wanted
Tchaikovsky? Yeah.
Yeah, wanted Einstein to be in there. Yeah. Or...
I guess so. I don't know. But anyway, that was a fun time. But yeah, so how long did you drive a cab?
I drove a cab for 12 years.
12 years.
3 in Boston and then 9 in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
over the span of about 20, but so on and off. But
right.
From the early 90s until 2012.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so you had a lot of stories, so you put them all in the book Hack. A bunch of them.
Yeah. So the first book, it was published by the University of Chicago Press in 2011, but because it's the University of Chicago Press, they're very thorough. And the book had already probably been done for almost 2 years,
mm-hmm.
or over a year by the time it came out.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, I was still a cab driver, and the crazy stories kept coming, so I had more material. So eventually there was a second book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing is, I know that I know how long you drove a cab, but you drove anywhere at any time.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. I know a lot of cabbies don't go to certain neighborhoods, and a lot of cabbies, won't pick up people of color.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was one of those
deals. A lot of cabbies don't go anywhere anymore.
Well,
because there are no more cabbies.
Because there's all the Uber. They now drive Ubers.
Yeah. Well, they are cabs. It's funny. I'm seeing the end of the transformation, because coming home from the bar, I work at a bar now.
Yeah.
Stopped off at the 24-hour CVS by my house, and there was an Uber out there, but it had a top light attached to it. Like so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this is like you're seeing evolution. The lit up top light like cabs have.
Yeah.
So it's literally it's morphing into a taxi.
That's true.
Because it is a taxi.
Well,
and they should stop calling it anything but.
I've seen the Lift lights in the windshield.
Yes,
a lot of them,
they're getting more and more high tech or brighter.
Yeah.
But now this is the first time I've seen an actual ad, and it's one of those digital ones, so it can change.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Dmitry Samarov is my guest. He is a writer and an artist, and he's got a new book called Soviet Stamps, and he's with us here. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing here on a late Tuesday night. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So, Dmitry, you are an artist. And you've actually done a portrait of me.
Which I have
hanging in my apartment.
Not in your closet.
No. I think it's great. It's really great. But I've been the subject of one of your portraits.
Yeah.
What have you been doing lately in terms of that? Do you do a lot of portraits?
Yeah, actually, well, strangely enough, I've got a portrait show coming up in the fall at Firecat Projects, which used to be Tony Fitzpatrick's studio, but is now a gallery.
Right.
I had a show there a couple of years ago. I had a series of marker drawings I did on the CTA, buses and trains. I went out all over the city, like a crazy person with a bag, old lady bag around my neck with all these colored markers, and just drew people.
Yeah.
And I had 50 of them up and a show, and it went pretty well. And so
this was on CTA, so it was on both buses and L's.
Buses and L's all over the city.
What was the response to people seeing you sketch them, or
well,
did they?
Well, see, the great advantage now is that since everybody is just completely glued into their own little realities and their screens, they don't even notice.
Yeah,
almost it was very rare to even be noticed.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I was taken as some like insane person on the L because
well, that's you know, yeah. one of many.
You but, would be, but you'd to be ignored, but to be ignored, you
yeah,
know, like
right.
so, like they probably. You know, people these days don't want to make eye contact at all anyways in public.
Right.
Why should they when they have their own reality and their own little bubble?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Now, so that helped me.
Are you still off the grid?
Well, I'm on the grid. I'm just not on social media
yeah.
or smartphones.
Yeah, that phone you just showed me, man, where did you get that?
It's from Switzerland. It's a company called Punkt. It's a Swiss designer. It's like the fanciest dumb phone you can get, basically.
Yeah.
Talk and text, no capacity for internet, no camera, you know, just talk and text.
Just
that's
talk
all
text
there is on there.
And that's
yep.
it.
Yep,
yeah.
Which is all I need. But I'm very much on the grid because I make a bunch of my living through the computer. So
yeah.
it's just that I like to leave the house and not have the thing follow me.
I understand. I remember when you actually stopped. When you
yeah, I think I was on after that whole thing happened.
Yeah.
Because that was in 2015 when I moved to Bridgeport and I decided to get off social media and quit the smartphones and just cut back, you know, on the all-pervasive technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote a thing for the Reader about it.
Right.
About kind of cutting the cord.
Well,
you know?
It was interesting because I know when we talked about it, you had become sort of like you were at social events, but you were scrolling around on your phone, not paying attention, and you were like, I can't, this is ridiculous.
Well, yeah, well, I did what everybody does because it's like, it's Pavlovian. You can't, you know, it's flickering lights. We're like moths to the flame, you know?
Yeah.
It's just not possible to ignore. Like, you know, if you go to a bar with a bunch of flat screen TVs, you're going to watch TV.
Right.
It's just impossible not to. And it's the same with these things, and they're in your pocket. So if you don't like your reality, you just, you know, change the channel to the reality you like.
Okay, I want to talk about these books here.
Yeah.
We're going to continue. Dmitry Samarov is here. We're going to continue to talk with Dmitry about his new books as well. 312-981-7200. It's the Nick DeGiglio Show continuing on WGN. And the Nick DeGiglio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio on a late Tuesday night. We'll get into Wednesday morning after midnight, and that means you pick the songs that we play when we come back from the breaks and the news. And the theme this morning is Wild Card Wednesday, so you can choose any artist, any song, anything. So 312-981-7200 as we continue the show. Dmitry Samarov is my guest. He's an artist and an author. And I've known him for a very long time. Used to drive a cab. Got many stories out of that. But I've got a couple of books in front of me right now. Mm-hmm. Well, one is called Music to My Eyes.
Right.
And then I know I've known you for a very long time. And I know that you do sketch a lot when you go see live music.
Right. And that's what Music to My Eyes is. It's basically there's about 160 drawings in it, which go back to teenage years. So like 35 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the best of them or a selection of these drawings that I've done basically my whole life and used them as a prompt to sort of spur memories or thoughts about what happened and more broadly what was going on in my life and kind of about art, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's really, it's beautiful. And by the way, the book itself is just, it's really neat.
When you guys booked me on the show, I sort of insisted that you get actual copies of these books because that's what sells them is kind of like, you do judge these by its cover.
No, absolutely. Like, I mean, they're beautifully put together,
both of
these books. The other one is called Soviet Stamps, which is your latest, and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
But Music to My Eyes tells great stories, not just about the band, but about you.
Yeah.
And the, I mean, obviously the artist that you do. And when did you start, you said teenage years, when did you start sketching like at shows, at music shows?
The first drawings in there like that were probably from like around middle of high school or so. Or towards the end, My parents sent me like on an art trip to France, like a summer, like 2 week thing.
Yeah.
And one of the things I did there was draw like buskers in the subway. And I came back and kept doing that in the Boston area where I grew up, in Harvard Square, where a lot of musicians hang out.
Yeah.
And that sort of started it. But I really got going on that when I moved back to Chicago in the late 90s, and,
yeah,
especially in the last 10 years or so.
And Chicago is just, you know, there's so much music in
yeah.
Chicago, and you know, on a local basis and
yeah.
on an international
but
basis.
Like, yeah, so I had this idea, since I had hundreds and hundreds of these sketches, to put them together in some sort of book, and everybody, every publisher or agent or anybody I pitched it to told me that the musicians that I liked, like, nobody knew them, and they didn't know how to sell it, and they said no. And it was one of many, many ideas that got canned, and I had no books or no pitches taken until sometime early in 2018, when this guy named Jerry Brennan, who runs Tortoise Books, I sent him like an excerpt about one, like just basically one of the pieces in there.
Yeah.
And he bit. So then I had to put together a book. So I put this book together, and in partnership with him. But I also wanted to sort of have more creative control over this book than the cab books. So the cab books were put together more traditionally, where, you know, you have a publisher and they have their own editors, they have their own designers.
Right.
So all my books have a lot of art in them, so they require a lot of sort of layout and kind of a lot of work to put together,
right.
more so than your average, you know, novel, say. But I wanted to give myself the challenge of actually putting a book together, kind of soup to nuts. So
mm-hmm.
I taught myself layout, got InDesign, and found a printer in Michigan who would make a hardcover with this foil stamping that's on both these books,
yeah.
and would be able to have end papers and kind of, you know, make a book the way, like, in my mind, I think of a book as this, you know, kind of a thing to be treasured in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Like a thing you don't just chew through and throw away, you know, not disposable.
We were talking about, you know, about how we all here on this show
mm-hmm.
prefer a physical book as opposed to reading something on your,
yeah.
scrolling through
sure.
on your phone or on your computer.
Yeah.
I love to smell books.
Yeah.
I love to hold books. And these are just the design on these books.
Yeah,
they're absolutely beautiful.
And what has sold these books is people seeing them in person.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Now, but, so now yeah. you're not doing the, you were telling me that you're not doing like the traditional route. And so how do people get these books?
Okay, well, basically, the easiest way for them to get these books is to go to my web store, which is store.dmitrysamarov.com. It's attached to my website,
okay.
which is dmitrysamarov.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy them directly from me. I have you know, it's very easy to use with any credit card or
yeah.
what have you.
Yeah.
The Music to My Eyes is also available through Tortoise Books, through their website. Because I published it in conjunction with them. But yeah, it's not, neither of these books is available on Amazon, or probably ever will be. And it's, the stores that do carry it are ones that I actually approached myself to carry
mm-hmm.
it. And there's a list of those in my web store. So if you want to get it at your local store, there are some stores that have these
that
books.
That still have it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's DmitrySamarov.com.
Yeah.
We've got links there to check it all
mm-hmm.
out. Dmitry Samarov is my guest. It's the Nick DiGilio Show continuing here on a late Tuesday night. Tom Hush is the producer. I am your host, Dmitry Samarov, the author of a few books here, and an artist is here live in studio, and we continue the conversation. So let's go back and talk, since you haven't been on in a while.
Mm-hmm.
How did you begin? You started drawing at a very young age.
Always, yeah. I don't remember ever not drawing. It's just always the way I dealt with the world.
Yeah.
always.
Yeah.
And it never went away. And sort of, yeah, this newest book, Soviet Stamps, it's called Soviet Stamps because it sort of takes as a jumping off point the stamp collection that I kept the last year or two that I was in the Soviet Union, and then a year or two into after our immigration to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the stamps, which were all, most of them were kind of like canceled stamps, you know, like steamed off letters and stuff. These aren't like precious, you know, like $1 million objects.
Right.
There's no inverted jennies in my, you know,
yeah.
stamp collection, but they were a very early and formative influence on me for art, because in this tiny little square there was like a whole world, you know,
yeah.
like if it was well done.
Yeah.
I played with them all the time, kind of rearranged them, and it was an early kind of step towards becoming an artist. And that's what this book attempts to sort of trace, is how I got into art and how I kind of adjusted to moving to America.
Yeah. yeah. Now you, how long did you spend in the Soviet Union?
I was like 7.5
when you left,
early 1978, actually the summer of 78.
Summer of 78, you came here and you went to Boston.
Yes.
And basically grew up in Boston.
Yes.
And that adjustment, how was that for a kid pushing 8?
It was jarring. I mean, yeah, it sort of left me with this feeling like that I was from neither place, kind of like that I was in the ocean somewhere between the two countries. Because, yeah, at 7, you're not quite the person you're always going to be. Say, you know, like if I was a teenager and I had moved here, well, A, I would have a thick accent. But also, I think I would feel more that the Soviet Union was like home, you know? But to add another, like, you know, wrinkle to it all is that like a decade after we came, the Soviet Union dissolved.
Right.
And became Russia. So as I write in the book, I come from a country that no longer exists.
Yeah.
So there's nothing for me to go back to.
Yeah.
It's one of the first things people ask me is if I've ever been back, and my stock answer is there's nothing to go back to.
Right.
I mean, geographically it's there.
Yeah.
And as part of the research for the book, I even did like a street view thing, you know, to see the house, where the communal apartment was, where me and my family lived like the first 6 years of my life. And didn't register, like,
yeah.
There was no memory.
Yeah,
obviously now it looks a lot different, but still, you know, it's an old building. Yeah.
How did that influence your art, that these experiences that you have, like you feel like you're not from any place?
Yeah, well, I think it gives me oddly a sort of a natural advantage, since I feel kind of at a remove from my surroundings. I think I have a clearer picture, because I'm not sort of like hold myself apart just by default, you know? It's hard for me to engage a lot of times, especially if it's like a group, like a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I kind of check out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it helps for the art. Doesn't always help for the social life.
No.
Opposite problem.
Yeah.
Opposite, you know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Two sides to everything.
But this book, The Soviet Stamps, you
yes.
were telling me you did this everything. Like,
yeah,
it's
so,
published,
yeah,
it's the whole thing
the
is put together.
Soviet Stamps has like a longer, more tortured path to publication than any of my books, because I actually started it right after the cab stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, I finished the second cab book, and it was about a year till it was published, and I was trying to figure out the next writing project, since writing had become like a regular thing. And I settled on the subject of like immigration and
yeah.
starting to do art, childhood. Thought I'd deal with that.
Yeah.
And that's when I started it. I started the book in like 2013 or something.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was done with it in about 2015. And then I tried to get an agent. I tried to get a publisher and got a million no's.
Yeah.
And eventually just shelved it. So then when Music to My Eyes came along, the process of putting it together and figuring, like realizing that I could do the whole thing myself.
Yeah.
I didn't need to wait for somebody's sort of approval or some institution.
Yeah.
Kind of pushed me to take another look at Soviet Stamps. And I dusted it off, had bartered with art with a couple of editors to take another look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And went back to the same printers up in Michigan, and they cranked them out. They were actually done about a month or two earlier than I expected, so that I got copies in November.
It came early. And again, it's a fascinating story, and there's great art in it because you're a great artist, but the book itself is just beautiful, and I think people should check it out. DmitrySamarov.com. We continue talking with Dmitry Samarov here on 720 WGN as the Nick DiGilio Show rolls on for a late Tuesday night into Wednesday morning on 720 WGN. The Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. My producer is Tom Hush. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio, and we continue here. Lindsey Cochran and Dan Ingenthrone from Great Moments in Vinyl are going to join me to talk about their next show, which is going to be Friday, January 31st at Martyrs. They're going to be playing Layla and other assorted love songs with Great Moments in Vinyl. And this is a great, great group of musicians that Lindsey Cochran gets together, and then they pay tribute to other artists and play full albums, and it's great stuff. We got a round of Know Your Onion, which is a game that we're going to play where Tom will read you a news headline, and you have to tell us if it's real or if it's from The Onion, because you can't tell nowadays. The historic Apple 1984 commercial debuted on the 22nd of January in 1984, and we'll talk about that and the greatest commercials of all time and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Wildcard Wednesday, you guys, you pick the songs and that we play when we come out of break and out of news. And today's theme is Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, you pick it. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. My guest at the moment in studio here is Dmitry Samarov, who is an artist and an author. Tell me, Dmitry, about this event that's happening on January 30th.
Oh, yeah. I'll be at City Lit Books in Logan Square talking to Kyle Beachy, who's a really good writer and local author, and also teaches writing at Roosevelt. Mm. This guy I've known for a while. But, yeah, we're going to be talking about Soviet stamps mostly. Mm-hmm. And we're actually, yeah, we're meeting up tomorrow to figure out how it's going to go. But it's another in one of these events that where I try to do everything to get out of reading out loud from my books, which I really don't care.
You're not a fan of?
No.
No.
No, I'm not. I think that's a performance, and I like leaving performances to the professionals.
Okay.
You know?
All right. I understand. So you were talking about how Soviet stamps came to be.
Yeah.
And putting it together, you know, and doing it just from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about some of the hurdles that you had to go over to do that, and some of the things that you had to learn, and what were the struggles and the triumphs of it? Because it turned out great.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was sort of like applying the lessons, as I was saying earlier, of the music to my eyes, as far as just formatting and just technical stuff, like dumping all the words and images into InDesign for that one took like much, much less time than the one before, you know? So obviously I'd learned, you know, on my, you know, from doing. But as far as the material, I mean, it was stuff that I hadn't looked at in about 3 years probably. Mm-hmm. So I added a few things, from suggestions from later editors and cut some things, messed with the order a bit.
Yeah.
So there are a bunch of interlocking essays that are they're roughly chronological, but things double back to like they pick up themes from earlier, and yeah. So you can read them piece by piece. I think it should work that way.
Yeah. You talk about your childhood experiences and what it was like and all that stuff. And you have a chapter dedicated or a piece dedicated to Spy Hunter.
Spy Hunter, yes.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was a video game in the 80s that I was really addicted to, that I would sneak out of my house, out of my window, which was a pretty high window, first floor, but high apartment window, to go to a 24-hour convenience store called Christie's to play this game. I picked up smoking Newports that time. Yeah, it's about sixth or seventh grade, I think. Because
wow,
because there's this,
and you went right to menthol.
No, but there's a reason.
Oh, okay.
The reason was that there's this older kid who was really great at Spy Hunter, and he smoked Newports. So I bought the Newports, thinking it would make me better at the game. You know, this is a child's logic.
Yeah, exactly. So you have a chapter here about or a piece here about New York.
New York, yeah. Yeah. I actually went my first. A semester of art school was spent at Parsons School of Design in New York, mm-hmm. in the fall of 1989, where my parents found an apartment for me, actually in a subsidized housing with this elderly Soviet immigrant. And it was just the two of us in this grubby little apartment in a Hasidic Jewish neighborhood of Brooklyn. And I was just, I had nobody to talk to. I was talking to the walls, basically. Yeah. And then I would commute in into Manhattan to go to school, and I knew within a few weeks that I needed to leave.
Yeah.
I liked the city, but Parsons had this system where it was kind of like kindergarten, where you were in, with the same kids in every class, and I didn't have any friends.
Yeah.
And it was... I mean, it's called the Parsons School of Design, but it was really heavily geared towards kind of commercial art. And
yeah.
I was not going to be a commercial artist.
Right.
Not at that point anyways. Yeah. It was many, many years later until I would like stoop, lower myself enough to do design, you know, which I do all the time now. But, you know, it took a lot of life humbling me to get to that point.
Dmitry Samarov is my guest. It's the Nick DiGilio Show on a late Tuesday night, and we'll get into Wednesday morning. We're on WGN. Tom Hush is the producer. I'm your host. And Dmitry Samarov, author, is my guest. So do you remember the first piece that you sold?
Art piece?
Yeah.
Maybe the first... I want to... In high school, there was a thing called Scholastic Art. Do you remember that?
Absolutely.
They published a magazine. It was like, you know...
Yep.
So I won one of those things. And as part of, like... So they would... You know, there was rounds. Like, you go up, you know, to what, states, nationals, whatever. And as part of that, they buy your piece. It was a self-portrait. They bought for like $100.
Oh.
Sometime in high school.
Mm-hmm.
That may have been... I may have sold some stuff to... parents, friends. I've been selling my art for a very, very long time,
mm-hmm.
and usually not for very much money. But it's funny. I don't remember. I guess I was excited about it, but it seemed like what was supposed to happen. You know, like I'm done with it, and then somebody else should have it. It should live its own life.
Yeah,
and hopefully I'm compensated for it. I'm sort of. In a way, full circle back to this point where, like, I've had some so-so experiences with galleries over the last couple of years where I decided to slash prices and just sell as much as I can.
Yeah.
Just in order to fund the next thing, you know? And it feels right.
Yeah. So
I've actually last year sold a lot more than I had in the previous couple of years.
Yeah.
Just with this new... rock bottom pricing model.
All of this stuff, by the way, the art is available. The books are available.
Yeah.
Go to DmitrySamarov.com. And that's S-A-M-A-R-O-V, Dmitry
Samarov. D-M-I-T-R-Y. That's the one that people get filed up on.
Okay, D-M-I-T-R-Y, DmitrySamarov.com. And the artwork is available. The books are available.
Mm-hmm.
And you continue, you draw all the time, right?
Oh, yeah. And then, I mean, I make a chunk of my living these days doing various things like pet portraits. Pet portraits are...
I bet that's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. And
yeah.
People love them, and it's... not very hard for me to do, but like even say in my 30s, I wouldn't have ever done it.
Yeah,
like,
I gotcha.
It took, basically I measure everything against, do I want to, you know, drive a cab for 80 hours a week, or do I want to
do a portrait of a dog?
Yeah, a portrait of a dog, and that wins.
Dmitry Samarov is really terrific. Check out DmitrySamarov.com. Thanks for joining us, Dmitry.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, the news is up after this. The Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is the producer. We're here keeping you company till 4 as we continue on this late... it's early. It's now a Wednesday morning. Later on, we will start Wildcard Wednesday. You pick the songs that we play throughout the morning during the breaks. And when we come back from break, when we come back from the news... you hear the songs and you program them. And we have a theme every morning. And Wildcard Wednesday is any artist, any song, anything. So there it comes. All right. In just a few minutes, Lindsey Cochran is going to be joining me in studio. And Dan Ingenthorne, who is a musician, will be on the phone. They are part of Great Moments in Vinyl. It's a project that's put together by our friend Lindsey Cochran, where he gathers together some of the greatest musicians in Chicago. And they pay tribute to other bands and other artists. So they're going to be performing Derek and the Dominoes classic Layla and other assorted love songs at Martyrs on Friday, January 31st. And we're going to talk all about that and what a classic album it is. And we'll hear a little bit of it and all of that. So that's coming up and much more. We got Know Your Onion coming up. That's the game that we play where Tom Hush, my producer, will read you a you become a contestant, and Tom will read you a news headline, and you have to decide whether it's real or whether it's from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. And there's more coming up here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We would love to hear from you. So it's I've read this story before. This has happened before. There is a real cold snap in Florida right now. And there's weird weather happening all over the place, quite frankly. And there's a falling iguana alert that's been issued in Florida due to the cold temperatures. But don't assume that the iguanas are dead. Iguanas slow down or become immobile when the temperatures drop into the 40s. They may fall from trees, but they're not dead. Green iguanas are an invasive species in Florida known for eating through landscaping. The National Weather Service, this is not made up. This is not an Onion story. This, in fact, is a real story. The National Weather Service in Miami has issued an unofficial warning for falling iguanas on Tuesday night due to an unusual cold snap that's hit the Sunshine State. This isn't something we usually forecast, but don't be surprised if you see iguanas falling from the trees as the temperatures drop into the 30s and 40s, the Weather Service tweeted. Iguanas are cold-blooded. They slow down or become immobile when temperatures drop to the 40s. They may fall from the trees, but they are not dead, the Weather Service said. Once temperatures reach a certain level, iguanas stiffen up and fall out of the trees. That's just, could you imagine that? You're walking around and iguanas just start falling from the trees.
Kids are getting ready to go to Disneyland.
Boom. Get hit in the head with an iguana. Chris Michaels is a meteorologist at WSLS-TV in Norfolk, Virginia, who said that this is something that's been that he's been observed over the years in South Florida. At about 50 degrees, iguanas can become lethargic. It's when the temperature drops to about 40 degrees or lower that their blood doesn't move around as quickly, and as a result, they stiffen up and fall out of the trees. Which is frequent. We apologize for the inconvenience. It's so cold in Florida that Disney World Water Park and other Orlando parks are closing. During a similar cold snap and iguana warning issued 2 years ago, well-meaning residents finding stiffened iguanas were advised to leave them alone as they may feel threatened and bite once they warm up. Don't assume that they're dead, Kristen Summers, who oversees the non-native fish and wildlife program at the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, said in a January 18th cold spell. Green iguanas are an invasive species. A two-week cold snap with temperatures below 40 degrees in 2010 killed off many iguanas along with Burmese pythons and other invasive pests that thrive in South Florida's subtropical climate. This week's cold snap should be short-lived, the Weather Service said, as temperatures are forecast to rebound into the mid-70s for highs in Miami by Thursday. So just a couple more days of cold weather. You know, it's amazing how there are how certain climate states that have a certain climate react to weather change. Because, yeah, I mean, 30-something degrees in Florida is crazy. Crazy. Because you think Florida, I think Florida, I think heat, I think humidity. That I think uncomfortable. That's what I think. That's what I think in Florida. But when it gets cold, I remember in New Orleans, it dropped down to like 30 degrees or something. People didn't know what to do with themselves.
They thought it was the end times, man.
Crazy. I went to my one of my ex-girlfriends. Her parents lived and still live right outside of Nashville in Franklin, Tennessee. And we went down there for Christmas 1 year. This was back in 2000, I want to say. Yeah. Christmas 2000. We went down to outside of Nashville. So it snowed. It got so cold that it actually snowed. Now, and everybody just didn't, they had no idea what to do. Everybody was freaking out. The newscasters were calling, you know, they were going crazy. And I will say this. I totally understand because they don't have salt or salt trucks. They have plows. You know, that climate outside of Nashville, you don't have to deal with snow. Now, granted, everybody was in a panic state, the natives. All they got was a dusting. You know, and coming from Chicago, where it snows, like it snows here, as everybody knows and has experienced over the years, I was like, everybody needs to calm down, but I'm from a climate where we get a ton of snow.
But the folks up in Canada look at us like, ah.
Yeah, it's nothing. It gets pretty cold here, though, man.
Oh, it gets cold here. There's no doubt. I mean, it's pretty cold today.
Yeah.
Going to be cold, not too warm the next few days. Well, but I saw some pictures of, like, Newfoundland.
Oh, yeah.
And people are just like, they're just snowed into their houses. All right, honey, we're not going out today.
Nope. But yeah, I mean, it's really funny because being down in Nashville, and of course, you know, my ex-girlfriend's parents blamed me. They're like, yeah, you brought this with you because you're from Chicago. You guys get 95 inches of snow every year. But it was really funny, though, to be there. You know what I'm talking about, to be in Nashville and just see the panic on people, like buying canned goods and stuff. And all they got was a dusting of snow.
Food, you know, just bread, canned goods, and eggs.
Yeah.
All you need to survive.
It was really funny. But I don't know about the iguana thing. Nick, I'm listening to you from West Palm Beach, Florida, and the iguana issue is pretty gross. They're huge. The ones we have at our complex are 3 to 4, oh my God, 3 to 4 feet long.
So about as big as a rat here.
Oh my God. That's a text from 630, and if you want to text or call us at any time, it's 312-981-7200. 3 to 4 feet long. That's pretty creepy, man. A 4 foot long iguana falling out of a tree. That's a horror movie. That's like the beginning of a horror movie.
Honey, grab the iguana blower.
We got to get a man.
Got to clear out these iguanas.
So West Palm Beach, I hope you stay warm. It's going to get warm by Thursday. West Palm Beach, Florida person who texted this.
Well, they just sent in a photo of these
of an iguana.
Yeah, a couple of iguanas here on a palm tree.
Uh-huh.
Good Lord. They're massive.
Yeah. So they're falling from trees.
that's a nightmare scenario. Oh. I'll just get smacked on the head by an iguana.
By a 4 foot iguana falling out of a tree. And then if you mess with them, they'll bite you when they warm up.
Ooh.
But iguanas all over the place in Florida. They got a lot of weird stuff in Florida. Florida's a weird place. So watch out for, if you're listening from Florida, watch out for falling iguanas because they could reach up to 3 to 4 feet long. So a little bit later on, we're probably going to jump into the topic of some of the weirdest weather because, you know, 30 degrees in Florida, that's just unusual and it's strange. So we're going to jump into that topic, but I wanted to share this story first. The falling iguana alert has been issued in Florida. So watch out for falling iguanas. Just for the next couple of days, it's going to get up to the 70s by Thursday. The iguanas will be up in the trees, not bothering you. So good luck out there in Florida with your iguana issue. All right. Hey, coming up, Lindsey Cochran is going to join us in studio. We'll have Dan Engenthorn, who is a musician, part of Great Moments in Vinyl, as they play Layla and other assorted love songs by Derek and the Dominoes. And that'll be on Friday, January 31st at Martyrs. We'll tell you all about that, talk about that classic album with a couple of great musicians right here from Chicago. The Giglio Show continues. Goodfellas. Every single time. Nick DiGiglio here, and we are continuing. It's live in the Skyline studio. Tom Hush is the producer. And, of course, that piece of music was the piano break from Layla, which is pretty iconic and legendary. A great group of musicians get together, led by Lindsey Cochran, and they're called Great Moments in Vinyl. And they're going to play Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs by Derek and the Dominoes on Friday, January 31st, 9 p.m. at Martyrs. And in studio with me is Lindsey Cochran.
Good morning. A legendary piano break and also ripped off. Jim Gordon, the guy who played the keyboard on it, who basically came up, that's with rabbit ear quotes there, with the lick, stole it from Rita Coolidge.
It was is that right?
It was a song she was working on. She had played it for him, and he had walked off with it and said, "Hey, Eric, check this out." And Eric said, "I'd love to have that at the end of my my song."
I never knew that before.
Oh, my God.
It's stolen from Rita Coolidge.
Absolutely. I mean, if I Google that online sometime, and you'll find her talking about it. You find the original song that she had written. You know, I don't think it had come out yet. I think she was working on it. She had played it for Jim, and he had just... Like I said, back in the day.
Can you hear her version of it? Is it available?
You pull it up on YouTube, and it's the same key, the same tempo. It's like,
man.
Anyway.
That's crazy.
Those are the kind of things I try to dig out when we do a Great Moments in Vinyl show.
Well, tell everybody about Great Moments in Vinyl, Lindsay.
Absolutely. It's a project of love. I love music. I love rock music in particular. I try to find ways to take these albums that were just iconic and legendary and or just made people happy and put them on stage, play them at a club somewhere and get the crowd into it and give you some backstory on it. I feel like we bring the music closer to you. Suddenly you're hearing it with new ears. You're hearing, like, now you'll never, you hear Goodfellas when you hear that piano break.
I pictured all the dead bodies that they discover in Goodfellas.
Absolutely. But also now Rita Coolidge is going to be part of that story.
No, that's completely, I had no idea about that story.
That's what I'm saying. You know, now I've added that layer.
You have. My mind was blown. I don't know if you know that, Lindsay, but you blew my mind this morning.
Well, you're keeping the words flowing, so that's a good thing.
Now, tell everybody about your background.
My background. I'm a radio guy.
Yeah.
Bill Cochran. That's how I'm known in the Chicago market since.
We hear your voice all over the place.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. So XRT, I worked there for a while. Worked at WNUA. Now I'm at MeTVFM playing timeless and memorable music, which is a lot of fun. And then I do various voiceover projects for things around town. American Mattress. I was the voice of Dominic's, if you remember Dominic's for a while. Things like that. Anyway, so I'm a voiceover guy. And about 6 or 7 years ago, I started going to the Old Town School of Folk Music to take bass lessons, to learn how to play. I mean, here's a story I always tell. It's like Old Town School of Folk Music. Oh, if you want to learn dulcimer or banjo, it's a perfect class.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they had rock classes.
Yes.
So you could take a class in the Clash music or the Rolling Stones or Eric Clapton. And you sit down with these charts, the chords and the lyrics. And some people in the class who can sing will sing while you play the guitar or the bass or the piano, whatever goes along with that thing. So out of those classes, I met instructors who were just so good at leading that music. One of the first ones I took was a Van Morrison class with John Mead and Elton Smith, who've been on this show.
Absolutely.
And just hearing myself be a part of this Van Morrison project, it was like, I wonder if I could do that with my radio skills. Tell some stories about the music. You know, basically do back sells or pre-sells while between the songs. Because, you know, you've been to plenty of concerts where the band plays and then they take like 2 minutes to get ready for the next song.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? You talk to your friends, you go to the bar, the bathroom, whatever. And I feel like you kind of lose the audience at that point.
Yeah.
But I've done these shows now with these telling the stories between the songs to set up the next song, to put you in the perspective of what was going on. And there have been times in a club, a nightclub, a bar in Chicago where you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
And
that's got to be gratifying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course, those nights we do the Rolling Stones and people talk loud during the entire show, even during the songs.
Right.
Those are nights I'm saying, why are you even here? Why aren't you at a restaurant if you want to have a conversation that loud? Anyway.
Lindsay Cochran is here. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WG and the Nick DiGilio show continues here. Lindsay is part of Great Moments in Vinyl. And they're going to play Layla and other assorted love songs by Derek and the Dominoes. And you heard a little piece. That was a rehearsal, right, that we heard?
Absolutely. On my little iPhone.
Yeah.
Just set it up and recorded the band while we were running through things last night.
Okay.
As a matter of fact.
There we go. Well, now, also, we want to welcome to the show one of the musicians who's part of Great Moments in Vinyl and will be in the band. And that's Dan Engine Throne. And we want to welcome Dan.
How's it going, Nick?
How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great.
Oh, good, good, good. You excited about this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I started listening to this record when I was probably 14, 15, you know, and I've played the songs. I've played a number of the songs with different bands over the years, but playing the whole collection all together and with the lineup that we have, for this. It's really going to be great.
Well, yeah. You know, and by the way, that was you that we just heard playing that portion of the song.
See, you know, I was listening to it, and I actually couldn't have even told you that. Like, it faded in as I was calling in, and I knew that Lindsay had rehearsal tapes from last night that he was playing, and I wasn't sure if it was the rehearsal or if it was the record that
was
listening
you, man.
To.
No,
so that's
that was
a good
you.
Sign.
That's a really good sign. If you were wondering whether or not it was the actual song, that's a really good sign. So, Dan, we want to get to know you. What's your background? Where are you from?
So I grew up in St. Louis. I've been living in Chicago about 15 years now.
Okay.
So I think I'm adopted at this point, Chicagoan.
You a Cardinals fan? You a Cardinals fan?
Not anymore.
Okay.
I probably
good,
shouldn't.
Good answer.
Shouldn't even get into that. You know, but
what happened to Nick? He's not on the phone anymore.
Yeah, right.
Dan.
Yeah. Oh, a lot of static. You know, I came up as a bass player, and so I was really into Jack Bruce's playing. You know, and you know, I was listening to Cream, and I was trying to just absorb all of it, and started listening to that Clapton Crossroads box set. You know, and it's just the stuff that. It covers the 60s and 70s, you know, with Blind Faith and, you know, the Derek and the Dominoes, but also, you know, the Delaney and Bonnie stuff, and how that connects with, you know, George Harrison and All Things Must Pass record and to, you know, the Beatles. It's just this great statement of, you know, 70s music. And I just, got I took in as much of it as I could as a kid, and you know, my friends that I played with back in the day, you know, we were just trying to pick up as much of this stuff as we could. And you know, the other thing is with these Clapton records and a lot of these songs that are on the Layla album, these blues songs, they were my introduction to musicians like Otis Rush and Freddie King and John Lee Hooker, you know, a lot of these blues musicians he was covering, and then mm-hmm. I went from there to figuring out, like, you know, the original recordings of a lot of those players.
Now, were you in a lot of bands in St. Louis?
No, I mean, I left St. Louis probably about the mid 90s, and I lived on the East Coast for a while. But you know, I'm playing with a lot of projects here in town now. You know, in addition to playing, so I play organ with the Heavy Sounds, which is a soul band. I play keys with Jess Robbins, great pop songwriter. I play bass in a couple of bands, Becky Levy and the Nightjars. I've got a Fleetwood Mac tribute called Secondhand News. Actually playing tomorrow night, a group that I think you had in the studio, Nick.
Yes.
The Warren Zevon birthday show.
Yeah, well, it's technically, because we're on the overnights, I always say it's tonight. So, because it's after midnight. So,
oh, yeah, it's tonight then.
The Warren Zevon, yeah. Warren Zevon birthday show with Androgynous Mustache. I know those guys really well.
Yeah.
So, we're going to continue talking with Dan, and we're going to continue talking with Lindsay. The show continues. It's the Nick DeGilio show here on 720 WGN, and we will continue as we continue right now. The Nick DeGilio show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio. It is a Wednesday morning, and a little bit we'll start Wildcard Wednesday. Every morning on the show, you pick the songs that we listen to from coming from the news and coming from the breaks. And our theme is Wildcard Wednesday this morning. That's any artist, any song, anything. If you can believe it, this is the anniversary of the Apple 1984 commercial, the big crazy commercial that debuted. And that was in 1984 during the Super Bowl. So we're going to talk about that and some of the greatest commercials of all time and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 if you want to talk or text with us. It's Nick DiGilio here. Tom Hush is my producer. Lindsey Cochran is in studio.
Speaking of anniversaries.
Yeah.
The album we're doing, 50th anniversary of Derek and the Dominoes.
50 years?
The Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs album, 50 years ago.
50 years. Man. I feel old. So this is Lindsey Cochran. He's in studio with us. Great Moments in Vinyl. We have Dan Engine Throne, who's on the phone with us.
Dan is amazing as a musician. One of the hardest parts of my job in doing these shows is actually just sitting there and focusing on what I need to play. Because the people around me are so good.
Yeah.
We did an Allman Brothers show about a year and a half ago, and there's an extended bass solo in Mountain Jam. And I said, I can't do that. But Dan said, oh, that was my a recital project I did years ago. Let me take that one.
Okay.
And he did. He just killed it.
And Dan, you killed it, huh?
Yeah. I'd known that one for a while. I was a big Allman Brothers fan. So.
Yeah, that's great.
He's amazing on bass. Like he's amazing on the keyboard.
I was a bass player coming up. So
yeah. That's pretty cool.
I was happy.
I have a question about Little Wing. How many times has that song been covered? Because you got, obviously, Hendrix. You've got this version.
There's a website for that, I bet.
Sting did a version of it. Sting.
That's true. Right.
Sting did a version of it. It's been covered many times. Stevie Ray Vaughan. Stevie Ray Vaughan.
And Gil Evans must have done it. Hendrix album that he did years ago.
So, anyway. You guys will be playing Little Wing as part of the Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs. Lindsey, I always want you to shout out who the musicians are, because you always gather together some of the best musicians. You mentioned... the Old Town School of Folk. That place is just a breeding ground for insanely talented people.
It is. But I have to admit, I've kind of grown into other directions, too. I can't remember. Dan and I worked on a Tom Petty show many years back. He came my way because someone had referred him. And through him and through other people I've met, I brought in Bill Grady, who's playing the Dwayne Allman bits in our show, because Bill is just a monster on
the slide guitar. I was going to say, those aren't easy bits to play.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get way up high on the neck doing that high stuff, that bird sound at the end of Layla. I mean, it's incredible the stuff he does. Plus, he sings, and he's a great just guitar picker anyway. Scott Tipping is our Eric Clapton for this show. Yeah. Scott, who has a number of projects around town. I actually wrote for a bio asking him to send me some stuff and then forgot to bring it. But one of the projects he's involved with is with Peter Himmelman.
Oh, really?
Who does these, they're like creative corporate team building kind of projects, I think. I'm probably not explaining it as well as I could. But basically, Himmelman will do a presentation to a bunch of business leaders. And while he's doing that, he'll demonstrate team play or team spirit or whether camaraderie with a band, show how musicians work together to collaborate and cooperate. And Scott is one of the musicians that Peter regularly draws on. I've got Jonathan Reed on drums. Known him for many shows now. He's done the Jimi Hendrix with us. I'm blanking out on some of the other things. He sang in our Dire Straits show as well as played the drums.
We did the Woodstock show with him, too.
Oh, my gosh, Woodstock. Yeah, Bill Grady and Dan and John. That was an incredible show. We had a guy named Christian Regala who came and sang Joe Cocker for the night. I mean,
well,
that was
also
amazing.
In the band, you had somebody who was at Woodstock.
Yes, right, Richard Pettengill.
Pettengill was at Woodstock, which still blows my mind.
Absolutely.
So, by the way, Lindsey Cochran is here, Dan Engine Throne, and it's Great Moments in Vinyl. They will be playing Layla and Assorted Love Songs. They're here on the Nick DiGilio Show, Tom Hush producing, and I'm your host. And the gig is on Friday, January 31st, 9 o'clock at Martyrs. Okay, who else is in the band?
That's basically it.
That's
just five of us.
Okay.
Just five of us. I'm a new spirit this year. I'm trying to keep my costs down. So just five people in the band.
Okay.
I was very ambitious when I put the show together. I said, hey, let's do that Aretha Franklin song that Dwayne Allman played slide guitar. And let's do that Wilson Pickett song. We'll bring in a couple of... I said, no, wait, hold on. Let's just keep it simple.
Yeah, well, it's going to be great. You guys you always get the best musicians. Dan, you like working with these musicians, I would imagine, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a fantastic lineup. I've done a handful of different projects with Lindsey with Great Moments of Vinyl, and so there have been several different lineups depending on what the project is. So you always kind of have a just a different, you know, you're walking into something different with each show, depending on what the music calls for. This is just a, you know, it's a rock show. There's a lot of blues guitar, and there's the two guitarists that are playing on it are just, what are they're perfect for
they,
the role.
They dubbed really it Shredfest, I think.
Is that what they said?
Yeah, I think that's the term. Yeah. And, you know, I really can't say enough about Johnny Reed as a drummer either. And he's also going to be singing a little bit, too.
All right.
Anytime you have a singing drummer pulling it off, that I think that's something special, too.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Johnny Reed, he's doing this show, but he also played the drums for our Stevie Wonder tribute. And played the drums for our Paul Simon tribute. I mean, he's just totally flexible.
Let me ask you. My computer just went out. I said, boom, black screen. Anyway, how do you? I mean, obviously, you communicate with a lot of the musicians, and you guys throw ideas around on what albums and what artists to play.
Yeah.
Is that how you come up with the artists and the albums that you pay tribute to?
Well, as Dan was just talking about, you know, it's a different lineup every time, but there's also an excitement, buying into it. It's like, oh, yeah, that's an album I'd really like to do, you know, so you have that enthusiasm that people bring, as opposed to, say, if we were a set band, then suddenly there are going to be some of those shows that, I don't really want to do that one, but I got to do that. So I find the people who are enthused about it, which is very cool. And the way the albums come along, the next shows, is just, you know, you were talking about what Dan is going to be doing with his bands over the next few months, and Warren Zevon tonight at Space. And I'm thinking to myself, I got to talk to Dan about doing a Warren Zevon show sometime.
Yeah.
So that's how it grows.
Mm-hmm. And it is. And it's great, too, because you guys cover every genre. I mean, you mentioned Stevie Wonder, you mentioned Paul Simon. You guys are doing Derek and the Dominoes. It's
we got a Rush show in the works.
We're
thinking about that.
Tom just lost his mind. He loves Rush.
And Billy Joel.
And Billy Joel.
Tom didn't react to that one.
No. Not as bigly as that. It's interesting. We talked about Rush. We've talked about Rush a lot.
Nice.
This past week.
Yes, of course.
Because Neil Peart died, and one of the greatest rock drummers that had ever lived.
Absolutely.
And so it hit us Rush fans pretty hard. That was a tough one.
I agree.
Wasn't it? I mean, you know, I ended up spending a lot of the time last weekend just listening to Rush.
Well, he was not just a drummer. Wasn't he the main lyricist?
Yeah. He wrote the lyrics and everything, and he was...
this is my photo.
That's your photo?
Of Neil Peart behind the kid. It's, I don't know if you...
You can't see him because of the kid. Because he has the biggest drum kit that you'll
like
ever see.
There's 30 drums
it's
and cymbals.
It's insane.
Around. So when, you know, I was talking to Johnny Reed about playing the drums for our Rush tribute.
Oh,
I sent him that photo. I said, start stocking up now.
Yeah, so you got to expand your kit, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
All right. So do you have favorite, Dan, I know you play around a lot. Do you have favorite venues? I mean, obviously Martyrs is you know, the kind of the home,
kind of our residency,
it's the home venue of Great Moments in Vinyl. But what other places
it's such a great room. But I love, as far as my favorite venues in the area, you know, I'd have to put Fitzgerald's in Berlin on the short list. I've been playing there a long time, and it's always just got a feeling like home. The Hideout is definitely another place like that. Let's see here.
There's so many great venues, I mean, in this town. Have you played Lincoln Hall?
Yeah. It's been a while, but, you know, Lincoln Hall is beautiful.
Yeah, it is incredibly beautiful, but man, acoustically, it's one of the best rooms in the city.
I agree.
There's no question about it. So many great venues. You have favorite places that you've played, Lindsay?
No, I just loved any chance to get on stage. You know, I mean, I've been seeing shows at clubs since I started in radio years and years ago. Park West was always a favorite room to catch a band in. Yeah. I've loved playing at Space. I have a special place in my heart for Martyrs.
Yeah. Well, Martyrs is really located right on Lincoln Avenue. It's 3855 North Lincoln. And it's been a favorite of mine for many, many, many years.
It's amazing people on that stage. We did a Who tribute there not long ago, and the owner, Ray Quinn, sent us a photo of Pete Townsend performing on that same stage at Martyrs and saying, you got a legacy to uphold.
Wait, Pete Townsend played Martyrs?
I think it was a benefit show it wasn't truly a Pete Townsend bill, but he was on that stage.
That's crazy.
They do that at Martyrs all the time. They get people like that in, doing gigs.
I saw one of my favorites one of my favorite bands of all time is Buffalo Tom out of Boston. And I've become friends with them. And I know Bill Janovitz, who's the lead singer, songwriter, and guitarist.
Former journalist, right?
No.
Was he? Oh, okay.
No. No. But he toured with, what's the woman's name from B-52s?
Kate Pearson?
The
other one.
Yeah, no, Kate Pearson, and Graham Parker.
Wow!
And they did an album together, which was called the Lost Songs of Lennon and McCartney, and they toured with it, and they played Martyrs, and it was one of the best shows I've seen.
Yeah,
hearing all these pretty unknown Lennon McCartney tunes played by three of my favorite people ever. At a bar, that's really made for music.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Martyrs
is. They have
a
passion for music there.
They do. Okay. Dan is with us, and we continue right now. Lindsey Cochran is continuing. And I want to talk about the album itself. We got to talk about Layla and other assorted love songs.
It was a strange time for music.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We're going to continue here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The Nick DiGilio Show is going here on WGN. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio. We're here till 4 o'clock. Tom Hush is the producer. I am Nick DiGilio, your host, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. In studio with me is my guest, Lindsey Cochran, musician and the guy who organizes Great Moments in Vinyl. And on the phone is Dan Engenthrone, who is part of the group that will be playing Layla and other assorted love songs. And I got some bullet points here about the album. Let's talk about this record because I remember the first time I heard the record. I was very young. I was just a kid, and it made a really big impression on me. I had my dad actually turned me on to Cream.
Wow.
I remember I can't remember what I was listening to. I was listening to something maybe. Sort of like poppy or something, because I was a big Tommy James and the Shondells fan. Still am. And that was the first artist that I got obsessed with, at 5 years old.
Sure.
I became like a massive Tommy James fan. And I think I was listening to it at some point. I was listening to Tommy James a lot. And I think my dad had kind of gone, all right.
He's not an awful choice.
No, he's not. I love Tommy James and the Shondells, but I was listening to it a little much. Absolutely. As kids will do, they would listen to the same album over and over and over again. They will watch the same TV show over and over and over again.
Right.
And I'm still that way, and I'm in my 50s, and I'm still that way. But so my dad's like, come here. And he brings me over to the stereo, the hi-fi.
Press Strat and Warthog.
Puts an album down and says, this is Cream, okay? And he put on White Room, and my head almost exploded.
Wow.
I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
And so I became sort of obsessed with Cream, and then, learning about them, and then moving on to Layla.
Did you have a guitar growing up?
I did. I played guitar when I was a kid, and then I moved on to drums.
Gotcha.
But Layla was a big album for me because I was such a massive Clapton and Cream fan. And it's the only album by Derek and the Dominoes. Came out in November of 1970 as a double album, which was kind of unusual at that time. Best known for its title track, Layla. The other band members were Bobby Whitlock on keyboards, Jim Gordon on drums, Carl Radel on bass. Dwayne Allman played lead and slide guitar on 11 of the 14 songs. And in the record guide, Rock Albums of the 70s, it was dubbed Clapton's most carefully conceived recording, while admiring the album's relaxed shuffle and simple rock and roll, and Clapton's generally warm singing.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just some of the bullet points and quick facts about Layla and other assorted love songs. You do research for every gig because you want to tell unique and fun stories.
Absolutely.
To the audience in between songs. What are some of the things that you found out about this?
Well, just what you said there. I mean, it was basically a quartet. It was Clapton and Whitlock and Radel and Gordon, and that was Derek and the Dominoes. And they had toured a little and worked up some songs and were starting to think about recording. And Eric was enamored of the soulful sound, the rhythm and blues sound that came from the United States. And he was working with three guys who were Americans. And so they went to Miami to record with Tom Dowd, a producer that later made Allman Brothers famous. Right. But he'd also done some other projects before that. Anyway, they wanted to work in America and done a few dates in the studio. And the album wasn't popping. It just wasn't happening. I don't know if the copious amounts of drugs had anything to do with it, but it just wasn't gelling. And Tom said, hey, the Allman Brothers are playing nearby. Why don't you come see them perform? And Eric hit it off with Dwayne, brought him back into the studio. Well, brought the whole band into the studio, but Eric and Dwayne actually sat late into the night talking, trading licks, comparing notes.
Yeah.
And Dwayne got invited back to contribute to the sessions, and that's where the album became the album that we know.
Yeah.
But that wasn't part of the original plan.
That's interesting. That's really interesting because he's a major component. Allman is a major component to this record.
Absolutely. Well, by that point, he was an experienced session man, and I think he had the feel for how do I take what I'm surrounded by musically and add something to it.
Yeah. Wow, that's great stuff. Dan, your first exposure to Layla?
I think it was pretty similar to yours, Nick. I was listening to a lot of Cream, and I kind of wanted to know everything that he was doing around that time. You know, I was really into the Blues Breakers, and I was really into Blind Faith, and because he was playing with Ginger Baker in that band.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if I heard Layla first or if I heard the live Derek and the Dominoes record, which is just the four of them, but has songs like Presence of the Lord, which is on the Blind Faith record. Right. I'm sure I had heard Layla on the radio, but as far as, you know,
the rest of
getting the
album, the
whole record and digesting it.
Yeah. It's a lot to digest, too.
I found my way through those channels. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you discover that album, Nick? Because Derek and the Dominoes had been not promoted as an Eric Clapton album. It actually tanked in the sales.
Yeah.
It took 2 years before that album really connected.
You know, I think it was because I became sort of obsessive about Cream, and I was, I guess I was reading in magazines and stuff about it and discovered Layla that way. And also, I'd heard the song Layla a million times on FM Rock.
Gotcha.
You know, I mean, it's still, to this day, it's a staple of FM Rock. And so I think that's how I got into it.
Because Eric, he was so fed up with the star power thing, you know. He was Clapton is God, that famous graffiti. He was still in John Mayall's band at that point when that came out. So, you know, that was grew even more huge during his Cream days, and then Blind Faith contributed to it.
Did you guys ever do the Blind Faith album?
No, but
you
thanks,
should.
Thanks for planting the seed.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, I love
but,
it.
You know, what
love
happened
that record.
What happened after that is that Eric wanted a way to step out of the spotlight, step away from it. That's why he hung out with Delaney and Bonnie and toured with them. But the Derek and the Dominoes, it's take my name off of it. I'm just part of the band.
Clapton has never been a guy, as far as I can tell, you know, and following his career for as long as we have, and I have, he's never been a guy that wanted to be in the spotlight. I saw him. He toured with Roger Waters.
Yeah,
on the Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking for the Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking album, and he stood in he stood you know, like the back part of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And
wanted to be part of the band.
Exactly. And you know, he was the back part of the stage. And I remember in the documentary about Chuck Berry called Hail Hail Rock and Roll, which is a fantastic music documentary and concert film. Taylor Hackford directed. It's all about Chuck Berry. Great footage about getting to know Chuck Berry, interesting, crazy guy, and then fantastic concert footage. Clapton is in it. And at one point, you know, he takes a solo. Clapton's taking a solo. I can't remember what song they were playing, but Clapton takes a solo, and Chuck Berry just goes, take another one, take another one. And Clapton was really, he was kind of embarrassed. And he's like, no, he's shaking his head no. And he's like, take another one, take another one. And then Clapton takes another solo. And then Chuck Berry made him take another one because he was so, like, Chuck Berry was just watching Clapton play guitar, looking at, it's Chuck Berry, you know, the legendary, the creator, one of the creators of rock and roll, looking at Clapton going, oh, man, you're good, you know?
And he is.
Yeah.
And he is. Well, you know, part of the reason he wanted to go incognito, too, is because around the same time, he wanted George Harrison's wife.
Yes, he did.
He wanted Patty Boyd.
Yes, he did. That's what Layla's about.
The whole album. I mean, just
the whole album is about that. Yeah,
top to bottom. You know, in his autobiography, Clapton writes, "I also coveted Patty because she belonged to a powerful man who seemed to have everything I wanted: amazing cars, an incredible career, and a beautiful wife."
It's insane the kind of songs that she inspired.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
you look back at the songs that woman has inspired. It's incredible. We're talking with Lindsey Cochran. He's live in studio. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, and it continues here on WGN. Dan Engine Throne is with us. The gig is Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs, and it's Friday night, January 31st.
Wishful thinking.
9 o'clock at Martyrs, 3855 North Lincoln Avenue. You can also see Dan play piano tonight at Space in Evanston with the birthday party for Warren Zevon. And my friend's Androgynous Mustache are performing that. Dan, this is the first time you've been on the show.
Yeah.
So I always ask musicians the first time that they're on the show, I ask them two standard questions that I ask every musician. I want to get these in. What was your first album? The first album you bought?
I believe that it was NXS Kick.
Okay. All right. And first concert?
I'm pretty sure I've gotten this wrong before, but I think the first band that I saw live was 10,000 Maniacs.
Oh, okay. Good choices.
Good choices. 1991,
You just gave away your age. That's all I'm saying. Dan, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. Lindsey, always a pleasure to have you
on. Thank
you, sir. So much fun to talk to you and have you in studio.
Absolutely.
Great Moments in Vinyl Play. Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs, Friday night, January 31st, 9 o'clock at Martyrs. Lindsey, great to see you.
Thank you.
All right. The Nick DiGilio Show continues with the news after this.
Let's all go to Hawaii, y'all. Everybody's getting laid. Let's all go to Hawaii, y'all. I hear a hula being played. We'll find some island dancers.
Nick DiGilio here, continuing the show. We are live in the Skyline studio. It's Wildcard Wednesday. You pick the songs that we play every morning, coming back from break and coming back from news. And the theme this morning is Wildcard Wednesday. That's any artist, any song. You made Wildcard Wednesday! Okay, what was that?
So that was Let's All Go to Hawaii by Shorty Long.
Okay.
And that's coming to us from our friend Harold.
All right, Harold.
That's a wild card.
That's a wild card, is right. 312-981-7200. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing here on a Wednesday morning. Tom Hush is the producer. I am your host. We've got an edition of Know Your Onion coming up. Know Your Onion is a game that we play. You call in, and if you can answer whether a news headline is real or from the satirical newspaper The Onion, you win. It's that simple. So we always love to play Know Your Onion. We got a Blackhawks Express to play here, and we're going to talk about some weird weather events because there's weird weather going on all over the place. We talked about the insane weather that's happening in Australia right now following these wildfires. We checked in with Australia, the Daily Mail Australia, in the morning yesterday. Talked about that, and we mentioned in Florida iguanas are falling from the sky. Well, no, that's not from the sky. It's not like Magnolia. There's not amphibians actually falling from the sky, but from trees, because it's getting cold in Florida, and that's not good for iguanas. They become immobile and they're not dead, and they fall out of trees, and so it can be terrifying. As someone who was listening from Florida a little bit earlier texted in, that they could get reach up to 3 to 4 feet long. And you saw some pictures, Tom, that were pretty terrifying of these big iguanas just falling out of trees in Florida. So weird weather stuff would be coming up. But there's an anniversary on this date. It is January 22nd. And on this date, in 1984, Apple's iconic 1984 commercial aired during the Super Bowl. And it was Super Bowl 27. And if you want to, No, it was Super Bowl 18. Super Bowl 18, because I, as I mentioned before, I am the age of the Super Bowl when it airs. So, like, I'm 54 because this is that's how I know what Super Bowl it is, because it's always the age that I am when the Super Bowl airs. So it's Super Bowl 54, but this was Super Bowl 18. 312-981-7200 is the we're going to talk about the greatest commercials of all time, and we want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. What are some of the greatest commercials of all time? We could even get into some local ones too. We don't have to stick to, because local commercials are hilarious. But so now, have you seen the 1984 commercial, Tom?
Yes, I took a class in high school called Rhetorical Analysis of Media, which is a
wow.
Yeah,
look at the big brain on Tom.
it was basically the class where we got to make movies.
Sure.
And we got to watch movies, but we watched a lot of stuff and listened to a lot of stuff. And one of the things we analyzed was the 1984 commercial by Apple,
mm-hmm.
because it's really the beginning of the modern commercial as we know it. Something that became more of an art than it was just telling you, you know, Sunday, 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 that sort of thing.
Absolutely. There's no question about it.
I mean, it's directed by Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott. I remember watching it. I was at my, my girlfriend's family's house. This was the girlfriend who was like 6 years older than me and had a child. I was a teenager and she was not, and she was my manager at McDonald's. That was a real healthy relationship.
How risque.
Yeah, well, we dated for 5 years.
Sure.
Which is insane. But anyway, I was at her family's house watching the Super Bowl, and everybody, there was the place, it was a Super Bowl party, so there were a ton of people there, a ton of food, all kinds of stuff. And I remember everybody just shut up when that commercial came on and was just, and that's also, I think, what ushered in the Super Bowl being the place to show your commercial or to debut a new commercial or a new product. And I think it's because of that 1984 commercial where it was like, okay, because now, I mean, I don't care about Kansas City or the 49ers. I don't. I'm going to watch the Super Bowl because of the commercials. Because we talk about the commercials every year on the show afterwards. So, but I think that ushered in this new era of, okay, we're going to do some really amazing commercials just for the Super Bowl. I remember watching it, and I was just, I had heard that Ridley Scott directed it. I mean, this is 1984, so this is like after Blade Runner, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was very excited about that. And I'd never really seen anything like it. It was awesome. It's an awesome commercial. So here's the story behind it. The iconic 1984 commercial. Do you guys remember seeing it? 312-981-7200. Talk or text. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And Tom Hush is producing. We're here till 4, and we're talking about the greatest commercials of all time, kicking it off with the 1984 commercial that aired on this date in 1984. So during a break, in the action of Super Bowl 18 on January 22nd, 1984, audiences first see a commercial that is now widely agreed to be one of the most powerful and effective of all time. Apple's 1984 spot featuring a young woman throwing a sledgehammer through a screen on which a Big Brother-like figure preaches about the unification of thought got people around the United States talking and heralding a new age for Apple, consumer technology, and advertising. The ad was directed by Ridley Scott, who directed the genre-defining dystopian science fiction film Blade Runner in 1982. The spot was in a similar vein, depicting a bleak, monochrome future where a crowd of bald extras, many of them actual skinheads from the streets of London, stood before an enormous screen broadcasting a message of conformity. A runner enters, being pursued by the police, and hurls a hammer at the screen, destroying it, just as the Big Brother figure announces, "We shall prevail." The text in the last shot makes the reference to George Orwell explicit. On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh, and you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984. Apple co-founder Steve Jobs loved the ad, but Apple's board did not. They asked the agency that produced it, Chiat Day, to sell back the time they had purchased for the ad, and 1984 only aired because Chiat Day resorted to subterfuge, intentionally failing to sell back to them. It was the right decision. The ad achieved every company's dream of being news itself, receiving free replays on news broadcasts the next day. Super Bowl ads were already big business, but many of the advertising world point to 1984 as the moment when the big game became a venue for innovative marquee ads, which soon became a major part of the overall spectacle of the Super Bowl. The spot also cemented Apple's reputation for being iconoclastic, disruptive, and forward-thinking, an image that has been central to its brand ever since. By telling a somewhat high-minded story and barely mentioning the product it was selling, no computers appear in the ad at all. It also helped establish that bolder, less literal advertising could be just as effective, if not more so, than simpler commercials. It was groundbreaking. It truly was. It was groundbreaking. And I think anybody who was around in 1984 watching that Super Bowl remembers where they were, what they thought when they saw that ad. And again, fantastic stuff. So we're talking about the Apple ad, and if you were around in 84, where were you when you saw it, and what did you think? And we're going to talk about the best TV commercials of all time and commercial ads, and we could do local ones too, and current ones. What are some of the best that are on right now? So and it's Nick DiGiulio here, continuing on 720 WGN. We want to hear from you. Best commercials, 312-981-7200. Nick DiGiulio Show continuing right here on 720 WGN. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. You pick the music every morning on the show that we hear coming back from breaks and commercials and the news. And it's Wild Card Wednesday. You hear me, Wild Card Wednesday? So, was that the Canadian, like, a Live Aid song?
Yes, it was.
Because I heard Brian, who was in, let's say Mike Reno. I heard Mike Reno, and I heard Brian Adams for sure.
Brian Adams. John Candy is in this. Neil Young.
Oh, of course.
Let's see. NHL All-Stars.
Who?
It doesn't specify.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Tom Cochran.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, wow.
A lot of people.
So after, you know, after the Do They Know It's Christmas, they did a everybody was doing, they were all doing like charity songs for Africa, and so obviously We Are the World was you know, the America's answer to Do They Know It's Christmas, and then it all culminated obviously with Live Aid. But there was the Canadian, what, who did Bill, Canadian Bill, request?
Yes,
this,
of course, correct. Canadian Bill. It's Tears Are Not Enough.
Tears Are Not Enough,
the song, and the band, the group, was Northern Lights.
Northern Lights, of course. Now, have you ever heard them? Have you ever heard the 80s metal one?
Oh, my God. No.
Oh, dude, find it. It's called We're Stars.
We're Stars?
Yeah, it's called We're Stars. And it has every, I mean, the video is fantastic because it has, like, every hair metal icon. And Dio wrote the song. Dio co-wrote the song. And so, the video is fantastic. It was at the height of you know, like hair metal. It was at the height of the popularity of you know, heavy metal and videos and stuff, and so everybody got in on the act. They had a heavy metal sort of, you know, Live Aid USA for Africa kind of a song, and it was called We're Stars. Is it popping up anywhere on the internets? The jam, man. The video is outstanding.
This is insane.
It's fantastic.
I can't even. We are magic.
Yeah, we're magic in the night. Dio, man. So, all right. Thank you, Canadian Bill, for requesting.
Holy cow!
See, now Tom has discovered the We Are Stars. What was the name of the name of the band?
Here. N Aid.
Oh, Hearing Aid. Right.
Hearing Aid.
Yeah, Hearing Aid. That's right.
Oh, my God. What decade was the 80s? Someone explain the 80s.
80s was the weirdest. You know, people are talking about how, like, the 70s were weird and everybody looked bad. No.
Oh, man, the 80s.
80s. 80s take it by a mile. All right. We are talking about we want to get in here and talk about the best commercials of all time. What commercial ads do you love? 312-981-7200 for talk or text. And the reason why we're talking about this is because this is the anniversary of the airing of the infamous and classic 1984 Apple ad. And it was only aired one time, and it became a phenomenon. And as we mentioned before, it ushered in this era of debuting, you know, really incredible TV commercials during the Super Bowl, where the TV commercials are nowadays just as big a draw as the game. So we have a little audio. We have a little audio from the Ridley Scott directed 1984 Macintosh commercial.
On January 24th, Apple Computer will introduce Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
Yeah. Legendary. Legendary commercial. And really beautifully shot and everything. I'm trying to remember because I know he used, I don't know if he used Jordan Cronenwealth who shot Blade Runner, but I know he used a really, you know, Ridley Scott, the director, used a really good cinematographer on it. Like he used like a, you know, major Hollywood like cinematographer and editors and stuff like that. It was filmed and shot and edited like a movie. And
it was Adrian Biddle.
Adrian Biddle. He shot a ton of movies.
Yeah, including On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah. So it wasn't like a cheaply shot, just thrown together commercial. This was a big deal. So, all right, we're talking greatest commercials of all time, 312-981-7200. We might even go, and I won't even go local here. What are some of your favorite local commercials? Here's Kathy on WGN. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, yeah, I totally agree with you. That 1984 commercial is one of the best ever.
Yeah.
For many reasons. The look of it in terms of the grayness, and then the orange shorts of the lady, who's actually a real deal thrower. Yeah. I don't know if she's hammer thrower.
Yeah.
Something. And then, of course, she represents Apple, and the man on the screen represents IBM, because back in the day, IBM was the big bad wolf.
Yep.
That was going to take over everything. And, you know, 1984 was a book we all read in school.
Yeah.
So we were aware of all of that. Yep. Absolutely amazing. Amazing. The fact that it has legs. So many years later.
It has. And and not only that, Kathy, one of them, as we've mentioned before, the fact that the product is not even in the commercial.
Right.
The product is not even in the commercial, and it's still, like, one of the best commercials advertising a product ever.
Yeah. So. And it could, you could run it today. I mean, you could, it would work today for sure. So it's timeless. Yeah. The other commercial I really liked that came out during the Great Recession was M&N's commercial for Pontiac, because it, that's sort of local. It was shot in Detroit. It really captured the bleakness of January in Detroit.
Yeah.
And then it has the gospel singers, you know, richly singing at the end.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Kind of like a sad blank, approach to that car. So everyone should look that one up on YouTube.
That's
as well.
That's a great one, too. All right, Kathy, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, have a good morning. 312-981-7200, the 1984 ad. This is the anniversary of the airing of the 1984 ad. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio show continuing here. Here is Bruce on WGN. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Nick. How you doing tonight, buddy?
All right, buddy. What's up?
Hey, I always love the commercial of the old school of Victory Auto Wreckers with the guy with the fro.
Classic.
Opens the door.
Classic.
Door falls off. Oh, I laughed every time, man.
It's the best. It's the best. You know, I got to tell you this, Bruce. Years ago, I had the guy in that commercial on my show on the anniversary. I can't remember what anniversary it was of the commercial. And he's an employee. He just showed up at work. He was one of the truck drivers. He showed up at work at Victory Auto Wreckers. They're like, hey, we're going to put you in this commercial. So what he's wearing in the commercial is what he wore to work. So that leather wristband, all that stuff, that's what he wore to work that day. And and to this day, you see the commercial on TV. And our very own Dean Richards does the voiceover on it.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Classic.
That's classic.
Thanks, man.
Classic. All right, buddy.
See ya.
I've got that too as well.
Well, I mean, we play.
I mean, we play. It's play the same.
They buy been... they buy time on the show.
I know. Well, they and it's been Dean forever, right?
Long time. Yeah. Not he didn't do the original voiceover.
Not the original.
Did not.
But I've got at least since the one I found is at least 1985.
Has he been doing it since that long?
Yeah.
Since 1985?
Yeah, I've got it. I listened to it right here. 1985, guy pulls, I don't think it's the same commercial that was described there, but guy pulls the door on
pulls
his
the
car,
door off,
falls
the door
off,
falls off.
And it's Dean.
Wow.
It's unmistakably Dean.
Yeah. So, all right. That's a legendary commercial. That's a local one. We're also talking about some of the best commercials of all time. 312-981-7200 on this, the anniversary of the airing of the classic Apple 1984 commercial. Nick DiGilio here, and we are continuing here on 720 WGN. Man, I loved Men at Work. One of my favorite bands. Colin Hay, one of my favorite songwriters and one of my favorite voices. Nice job. Nick DiGilio show here. It continues on 720 WGN on this Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday. You pick the songs every morning. Wildcard Wednesday means any artist, any song, anything. Wildcard Wednesday. Who requested the Men at Work?
So the Men at Work is coming to us from Lou.
Lou.
It's a Mistake.
It's
is
a
the
mistake.
Song.
Yep.
It's a Mistake.
Great song. All right. We were just talking about how this is the anniversary of the airing of the 1984 Apple ad, and that's going to get us talking about some of the best commercials of all time. And we want to hear from you. Talk or text 312-981-7200. Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, this one was voted one of the top five commercials of the 1980s. And as it's interesting you played Men at Work, because I'm thinking of you and Tom and me and other people who are working and sleeping at opposite hours of most people.
Right.
I'm sure you can relate to poor Fred, who worked for Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, yeah.
Who has to get up in the middle of the night, and
yep.
He sits up, swings his legs over the bed, and goes, time to go make the donuts.
Yep. Time to make the donuts. Time to make
and
the donuts.
And I'm sure you've had that exact feeling many times.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a classic commercial, and that guy became sort of the iconic face of the brand. You know,
I always think of, man, I see a lot of great commercials. I can't even remember what they were about.
Yeah.
I remember the commercial, I can't remember the product, but yeah. That one you sure could.
You sure could. And it's also one of the keys in having a good commercial, or at least an effective commercial, is if you get a catchphrase out of it. Like, if it's a catchphrase that people will remember, and that's definitely one of them. So,
you know, one of my favorites, and this guy's made more money off the commercial than he did as a comedian. That thing got a Hemi?
Yeah. All right, Doc. Thanks, man.
All right, man.
Take care. David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. What's up?
So 588-2300, the Empire commercial, is a total classic in Chicago, man.
Yeah. And then they added the 1-800, because it used to just be 588-2300. And, you know, the Empire guy passed away, but he's still there in animated form.
Yeah, the
Empire Carpet guy is still there in animated form. So,
yeah, I don't think they ever gave him anything extra for doing that either.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, he still does the voiceover. He's not alive anymore, but that's his voice on the commercial and his image animated, which is a little strange. So,
yeah, I asked about it once, and he never really got anything extra. Neither did the Victory Auto Records.
Oh, he didn't get anything. He didn't get anything, and they've been showing that commercial for like 40 years or something, and he didn't get anything. So, all right, David, thanks, man.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. That Victory Auto Records guy, when I had him on, this was a bunch of years ago, when I had him on, he was not happy. Like, I think he got paid like $20 or something extra just to do the commercial, because it was just a day of work for him. He was just going to work to, you know, to tow the cars and bring him back to the Victory Auto Records. And they were like, yeah, you're going to be in this commercial. And I think they gave him like $20. And so, you know, if he would have been like an actor or something who had like, you know, who had a contract or whatever and had residuals, the guy would have made a ton of money. Instead, he came to work, got $20, and he's appeared in a commercial. The dude was not happy when I interviewed him. He was not happy. Texts are coming in. What are the best commercials? What are your favorites? 312-981-7200. 864, my favorite commercial of all time when I was a kid was the Beggin' Strips commercial when the dog smells bacon and he finds the bacon and he chews it up and says, "It's bacon!" 719 says, the Apple Think Different commercials was still an epic. The Budweiser Frogs, of course the Budweiser Frogs. You know, classic. The Clydesdales. You know, those are all classic. Doritos are notable in my mind. 301, I think that maybe the ads that have stuck with me most over the years were the ones from my childhood and Saturday mornings, like Captain Crunch, Cracker Jacks, Ring Dings, Quisp, and Quake. Yeah, you're going to remember a lot from your youth. So, on this article here that I have in front of me, was they used a little way of scoring the commercial. Like, first, they've got to be memorable, like "What's up?" and "Where's the beef?" stuff like that. They're share-worthy for maximum exposure. Your ad want to make people talk about it with other people, both in real life and on social media. They communicate the brand's values. The best ad captures the brand's voice and identity and the ethos behind your company. And call to action. An effective commercial makes it clear that it wants you to do next, whether it's visit a website, lease a car, or buy some candy. So they split it up into different categories. Here's what they say are the funniest commercials. Old Spice, the man your man could smell like, from 2010. When Old Spice realized that women made the majority of purchasing decisions when it came to men's body wash products, they took a different approach with their next campaign. While the tagline, "Don't let your man smell like a woman," might not fly these days, the genuinely funny non sequitur dialogue of Isaiah Mustafa's perfect delivery made it a massive hit. Old Spice's ad was perhaps the pinnacle of the absurdist, unpredictable, memeable humor many advertisers have embraced in hopes of creating a viral hit, and it worked. The ad took home nearly every major industry award that year and currently stands at over 55 million views on YouTube. Old Spice, meanwhile, has continued to hone their offbeat brand voice with a hugely popular follow-up to the campaign starring actor Terry Crews. All right, here's we got more calls coming in. 312-981-7200. Here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hello, dear. I got a good one for you. This one Christmas, I told him I was ready to put my son up for adoption. They had a commercial on TV, and the guy on there would yell, "Timber," and then the tree would fall over. Well, I'm in the kitchen, and I hear my son, who's only about 8 years old, and he's in the front room, and he yells, "Timber," and my Christmas tree went flying.
That's hilarious.
And then
that was it. You wanted to put him up for adoption. It was. That's hilarious.
I had to go in there and pick it up and put everything back on it because everything went flying.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. All right, Linda, thanks
it
for sharing.
It wasn't for me that morning, I'll tell you.
Thanks.
I don't even remember the commercial. I think it might have been for Brawny or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember it either, just from that catchphrase. But all right, I appreciate it, Linda. Thank you.
It anyway, but well, he's 52 now, so.
Okay. All right, Linda, take care.
I don't think he's going to be. Well, I wish his son would have did it to him, but that commercial ain't on anymore.
All right. It's okay, Linda. Thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Kid knocks over the Christmas tree and says, "Timber." Linda, thanks. 312-981-7200. Here's one that they in this article about the best commercials ever under funny category. Tom, you remember the Reebok commercial, Terry Tate, office linebacker?
Oh, my God.
Huh? Hilarious commercial.
I have forgotten about that for years. Terry Tate.
Hilarious commercial.
Absolutely just melting dudes in the office.
It's so funny. It is so, so funny. That was a Reebok commercial, and it was slapstick violence. Since the earliest days of comedy, it's a foolproof way to make people laugh. Reebok's Super Bowl 37 ad had plenty, along with an amusing premise, boosting office productivity, an element of surprise, and solid one-liners and delivery. The spot was roundly praised by critics and viewers alike that year, though whether it actually succeeded in boosting Reebok's brand is questionable. According to one poll after it aired, just 55% of viewers recalled the ad was affiliated with Reebok, though Reebok considered it nonetheless a success. Citing a fourfold increase in online sales, it's still a good reminder to consider whether you've misaligned subject matter that may cause your ad to become victim of the vampire effect. That commercial was hilarious. But I got to be honest with you. I couldn't tell you. I remember the commercial. I couldn't tell you what the product was, though. Unless I had it in front of me right here, I wouldn't have known it was a Reebok commercial. Would not have known. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, I got a local one. I think you probably remember it. It was that middle to late 90s. It was a WGN TV commercial. But they said the city that invented skyscrapers and one man learned how to fly. And then they show Michael, a silhouette of Michael going over the skyline.
Mm, okay.
And probably my favorite one, and you'll get this, David Naughton in that black vest and white shirt for Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, I'm a Pepper, you're a Pepper.
But then about a year later, that song Making It came out, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that's him. And then he starred in American Werewolf in London. So there you go.
Oh, that's right, Lampoon, yeah.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Steve.
Hey.
Bunch of people are calling in here. Here's Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Hello, dear.
Hello.
My favorites are those Geico ones with Flo.
Well, those are that's Progressive, not Geico.
Yeah, Progressive, right.
Yeah.
Where she plays all the characters and
yeah.
And the one where they walk out of the corn.
Yep. Those Progressive commercials are funny. And, I mean, I think it goes without saying that right now. The Geico continually makes great commercials. Like, the Geico commercials are clever, and they're really funny. And, you remember the product. You associate Geico with those commercials. Whoever does the Geico commercials, they're brilliant. They're brilliant.
I also love the Mayhem guy.
Yeah, that's Allstate. Yeah.
The one where he pretends to be a cat.
Yeah, and he's pretending to be a dog now. In one of the commercials with he actually brought in Tina Fey. He used to be on 30 Rock. He played Tina Fey's ex-boyfriend on 30
Rock. Some of these commercials are so good they could almost be like little shows.
Yeah, yeah. All right, thanks, Paul.
Bye.
All right. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hello, fellow Earthling.
Hello.
Hello. I'm not sure I remember the actor's name, but I'm just going to give you the punchline, and I'm sure you're old enough to remember this one. Yeah. Knock It Off. I dare ya.
Yeah, that Robert Conrad. That was Robert Conrad. Chicago's very own Robert.
Duracell commercial.
Right. He put the battery on his shoulder, and he would
yeah,
dare he would,
man.
He would
Who
dare
remembers
you.
That?
I remember it. I totally remember it. Yeah, I remember it. Yeah, Tom, there was an actor named Robert Conrad. He was from Chicago. Best known for a show called Baba Black Sheep, which was a World War II fighter pilot show. And he was also best known as the most aggressive person on the Battle of the Network Stars. Have you ever heard of the Battle of the Network Stars?
No, what was that?
Oh, man. It was the best, man. It was the best. This was in the 70s, and it was on ABC. And what they did was they would get all these stars from TV shows from ABC, NBC, and CBS. And they would be on teams, and they would do, like, Olympic events, like physical events. Howard Cosell was the host, and the ratings would go through the roof. And one of the reasons why it was so cool was because all of these other stars from different networks were all on one show. And Robert Conrad was the most competitive. Like, he was a lunatic. Like, if his team lost, he'd go nuts. Gabe Kaplan was always really good on it. If you go back, you look at you like Wikipedia or Google Battle of the Network Stars, and look at the list of the unbelievably iconic 70s stars that were on that and showed their athletic prowess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it ended with a tug of war between the two networks that were at the highest. They also had like a dunk tank.
Jeez.
It was iconic.
What the hell?
Yeah, and I'm sure you can find footage of it. I'm sure.
Yeah,
it's all
I was looking up that. Conrad. It was Ever Ready Battery.
Ever Ready. It was Ever Ready.
Ever Ready. Yeah.
Yeah.
These are ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Robert Conrad. All right. It's Nick DiGilio here. The show is continuing, and we want to hear from you. We are talking about some of the best commercials of all time. Got a lot more here. And also, if you want to jump in on the local commercials or the commercials that are on right now that you think are great, 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN. Yeah. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing here on 720 WGN. Tom Hush is the producer, and I am your host, Nick DiGilio, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Requests coming in. 312-981-7200. What was that, and who requested that for Wildcard Wednesday?
So that is coming to us from Mike in Old Irving Park.
Yeah.
It's a group called Bag Raiders, and the song is Magic Feel.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Magic Feel.
We're talking the best TV commercials. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. This is the anniversary of the only airing of the 1984 Apple commercial, and it was during the Super Bowl on this date. And so that got us to thinking about some of the best TV commercials of all time. 248 says Joe Namath and Noxzema, Mean Joe Green, Coca-Cola. That's one of the classic. That's one of the classic commercials of all time.
Mean Joe Green
commercial is one of the classics. 309 says, "Hey Nick, I miss the old radio and TV ads for horror movies back in the late 70s and 80s." Yeah, I love those too, especially when they were on the radio. I loved when they, you know, I've got the deluxe crazy Phantasm, you know, box set, and one of the extras is they include all of the commercials, the TV commercials that ever aired. They have all the trailers, the TV commercials, and the radio ads that they used to play on the radio. And then they also have the trailer and TV commercial for when they re-released Phantasm as a double bill with The Fog. So it was Phantasm and The Fog. So the commercials were for both. The commercials that they have were their classic commercials. Have you dug into that to the extras?
Oh yeah, because I was actually going to give you a little bit of this.
For 10 years, the secret of Paragord Cemetery has remained a mystery. Now, three innocent people are about to discover the ultimate evil.
We've got to warn people.
This summer, the ball is back. Universal Pictures presents Phantasm 2, rated R.
Yeah, there it is. Phantasm 2. Yeah.
I love those radio spots. I think there are some that I've heard from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They're, that are great.
The classic, like what this listener is talking about, those were classic commercials. They were fantastic. The radio ads for horror movies. I remember Suspiria had a really terrifying radio ad when it came out. 708 says Lipton Brisk Tea Brisk, baby. Yeah. 312, what about the Kool-Aid Man? Oh yeah! Isn't that what he says?
Yeah, he breaks into people's homes.
I remember in the debut episode of Family Guy, the Kool-Aid guy busts through a wall during a courtroom scene.
Yeah,
and then like steps back because he's like, oh yeah, and everybody looks at him like in shock, and then he just kind of like slowly steps backwards through the hole he made in the wall. Aaron from Waukegan says, "Where's the beef?" You know, if you weren't alive in 1984 when that commercial hit, that woman was everywhere. Clara Peller was everywhere. And there were Where's the Beef t-shirts. It was political. Obviously, that was a campaign year. That was an election year. And it became part of the election. It was a catchphrase that was everywhere. Everybody was saying it all over the place. Clara Peller was on talk shows. She was cast in a terrible movie called Moving Violations. Everywhere. Here's Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
I can't remember what the program is, but I think it was like maybe the 60s back in 2004 and 5.
Uh-huh.
It had a bunch of little subplots, and one of them was the son was in Vietnam, and he came home. And at the end of the program, Ford had sponsored the program, and at the end of the program, Ford had like a five-minute commercial. And it was a kid coming home from the Gulf War, and his mom and little sister, brother, pick him up, and dad's not there, and mom's making excuses for him, you know, and dad's a Vietnam vet, and he gets home, and they're in the kitchen, and hears his dad's car come in, and he walks out, and his dad's driving a 69 Boss 429 Mustang, and goes on about it, and the kid says, yeah, he says, I had my first date in this, and dad goes, oh, no, you didn't. He says, I wrote down the mileage every time I parked it. And he said, yeah, but we just drove next door and sat in the driveway and listened to the radio all night. And then the dad goes, well, you want to go for a ride? He says, yeah. And the dad goes, well, yeah, you drive this time. He says, this one? And the dad goes, no, and hits the garage door opener and tosses him a set of keys to a new Mustang that's in the garage.
Wow. Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
And then I think it was also, this just came up when you said this, but with all the Budweiser commercials, remember the one where the donkey wanted to be a Clydesdale?
Oh, yeah. That's a great commercial. That's a great commercial.
We were down in St. Louis that year, 2005, and did the Budweiser tour, and that donkey had his own stall. He was a celebrity.
Yeah.
That's, you know,
fantastic.
So.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, Rich.
All right, have a good one.
Take care. What about this one they mentioned as one of the funnier commercials? Do you remember the Snickers commercial with Hungry Betty White?
Yeah, isn't she playing football?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're not you when you're hungry. They're still doing that. They've got a commercial now. It's an armed robbery where they're robbing a Brinks truck. And a guy is wearing fishnets instead of wearing fishnets instead of and that's the thing. You're not you when you're hungry here.
Whoever came up with that slogan, that whole ad campaign must be raking in the dough right now.
Well, there's a lot of money in these things. I mean, the you know, that Verizon guy who's now with, what the hell, he's with a different company now. He's with Sprint now?
Yeah,
he's with Sprint. Yeah. That guy has made millions.
Mm-hmm.
Flo. Millionaire. She's a multimillionaire.
Has to be.
No, she is.
Yeah.
I mean,
I have seen her in some TV, though. She's done a little bit of acting.
I think she's funny. I think she's very funny.
Quite funny.
Yeah. Man, tons of texts coming in here. Here is Lulu on WGN. Go ahead, Lulu.
Hey, Nick. Hey. Do you remember the commercial for smart beepers?
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't remember exactly how it happened, but there was a girl, she got in a car, and she ripped off a fart.
Oh, yeah.
And three more people had to get in the car.
Yeah.
And the funny, and it was pretty funny, but if you ask people at the time what the ad was for, nobody knew.
Oh, no, I remember the commercial. I couldn't tell you what it was for. I remember it was because that year, because they debuted that commercial on whatever year that was for the Super Bowl, and that year it was a particularly tasteless group of commercials. Because it seemed to be a theme that year that there were like commercials where when they were over, you were like, what was that? Because they were very tasteless, ripping farts and doing all kinds of other stuff. Yeah. So
it was pretty funny.
It was. Okay, Lulu, thanks.
All right.
Okay. Bye. Is this Enoch? Enoch.
Yes, sir. This is Enoch. How are you?
All right. What's up?
Yes, sir. Good morning, first of all, everybody. I love the commercial with Spike Lee and Michael Jordan. Hey, Mike, it's a shoe. And then two more, Rodney Allen Rippey, the burger is too big to eat.
Yeah.
And one of my all-time friends, hey, Mikey.
Yeah.
Hey, Mikey.
He likes it.
He won't eat it. He won't eat it.
He hates everything. Yeah, for life. So, you know, they got a new Mikey, and it's a girl. Did you know that, Enoch?
I heard about that.
They have a new Mikey, and it's a girl. All right, Enoch, thanks, man. He likes it. Hey, Mikey. 864 sends in a text that says, hey, you remember the scary PSAs that come on late at night? And in my area, there's a PSA that says things that are deadly or dangerous, like you choose to drink and drive, and this is the next 60 minutes of your life. The video was black and bluish, white, with a 60-second timer in the bottom right screen. When the damage is done, the clock reaches 60 minutes, and the deep voice guy says, South roads can be highways or dieways. The choice is yours.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's an important message, man.
It is, but that's, like, so intense. Highways or dieways.
816, I can't believe I ate the whole thing. Alka-Seltzer.
You know, I've never had Alka-Seltzer in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
708 says, more of an environmental PSA, but the Indian gentleman with the braids has that single tear running down his face because of garbage in the water. Well, there's garbage in the water also because, like, people are driving by on the highway and they throw a bunch of crap out on the side of the road. And then the guy who's supposed to be a Native American, who wasn't actually in real life, has that one single tear rolling down his face. Iconic. So, all right. Lots of texts coming in, phone calls, and we're talking about some great commercials, both past and present. 312-981-7200. The Nick DeGiglio Show continues. Nick DeGilio Show continuing right now on 720 WGN. It's Wednesday morning. Tom Hush is the producer, and I'm your host, Nick DeGilio, here on WGN. And it's Wild Card Wednesday. You know what I think of when I hear that?
What?
Martin Scorsese's film in New York Stories.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They play it like 500 times in the So that's like that was by far the best of those three in New York Stories. Nolte, fantastic in it. And Rosanna Arquette. So it's Nick DeGilio Show continuing. How are you? 312-981-7200. We would love to hear from you. And if you want to request a song for Wildcard Wednesday,
give me Wildcard Wednesday.
Any artist, any song, anything, get your request in now. So it is the anniversary of the airing of the 1984, the classic 1984 Apple commercial. And so we're talking about commercials, great commercials. By the way, did you notice that the last commercial that was played?
Yeah.
Victory Auto Records with
there
Dean.
Iconic.
Iconic is right. 630 sends a text, and you can send a text too and call us right now with your favorite commercials, best commercials ever, 312-981-7200. 1980s FedEx commercials with the world's fastest talker, John Moshita. Do you ever see those commercials?
Yeah. Yeah. I've watched him do the fastest talking thing.
Yeah.
Like, I think he also did a bit on a news program where he sang bad in under like 10 seconds.
773 says, at 1983, the New York Giants in an advertisement for Pepsi Light, I can still sing it. Remember that. 708, what about the Doublemint Twins? Yeah.
Double your pleasure, double your fun.
Doublemint Twins, man. 708 says, what about Earl Scheib? We'll pay any car for $99.95. I think it was cheaper than that. I think it was $69.95. And then they raised it as the years went by. We had Earl Scheib right by Wrigley. Yeah, that was everywhere, too. 312-981-7200. Here's Thomas on WGN. Hi, Thomas.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
All right. What's up?
I was calling to see if you remember in the 1980s, Lou Rawls did it like a buffering commercial for WETV.
Oh, yeah.
But he sang the jingle.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a classic.
It's a jam.
Yeah, it's a great song. Can you find that? Lou Rawls WGN-TV commercial. It was they ran it all the time over at WGN-TV. It was classic. It was a classic one. Thomas, thanks for the call, man.
In the most of the moment, that's the way you are. We've been living life right with you, sharing good times. We've come far. We're a part of Chicago, a city filled with pride. Growing up together with a good feeling that grows from inside, filled with pride. When you turn to us, welcome home.
Welcome
home. Chicago's very own Channel 9.
Keeping in touch with tomorrow. Look at the lineup this fall.
More movies, news, sports, and fun. See us. We've got it all.
When you turn to us,
welcome home.
Welcome home.
Chicago's very own Channel 9. The part of Chicago.
We belong to Chicago.
Chicago.
Classic.
You should have seen the clips that they were showing.
Yeah.
Like, they showed, like, a clip of Dustin Hoffman in Papillon.
Papillon. Yeah.
It was just interesting.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that brings back a specific time period, man, when Lou Rawls was singing the jingle for the for Channel 9. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You know what commercial? There's a new commercial that I thought was great. The first time I saw it was when I was watching Raw. When I was watching wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a Taco Bell commercial. And you're going to see 800 Taco Bell commercials during Raw because that's the target audience, is somebody who's going to eat at Taco Bell. It's this commercial, though, where these two guys are sitting on a couch. There's a girl, like, in the kitchen. And there's one nacho left on the plate. Have you seen this commercial?
I think so.
And the guy picks up the nacho to eat it, and the other guy grabs his hand and says, "That's my nacho." And then they start beating the crap out of each other. And then the girl gets in out, starts smashing plates over people's heads. And then they end up smashing through a wall into the next apartment where there's a giant giant-sized Taco Bell nachos that everybody can share. But I thought the commercial was really fun. I thought the fight stuff was really good. So it's just them beating the crap out of each other for the last nacho.
Directed by John Woo.
Yeah, well, it seemed to be inspired by that stuff, I can tell you that much. All right, they've got some weird commercials. What are some weird commercials? 312-981-7200. There are ads that make you laugh, and then some that make you cry, and then there are ads where you go, wait, what? These weird commercials fall squarely into the last category. While there are vintage examples of bizarre ads, many experts agree that we largely have the Super Bowl and advertisers' never-ending quest for online for being online to thank for the relatively recent rise of advertising. See how they did that there? Advertising.
Wait, so they took the ad out and they put in odd because they're weird.
Because they're weird commercials. See what
Man,
they did?
What are these guys going to come up with next?
I can't believe
it. I can't. Wow. What a time we live in. 2020.
All right. E-Trade Monkey from 2000. A chimpanzee in an E-Trade t-shirt stands on a bucket in a suburban garage lip-syncing La Cucaracha as two off-rhythm flannel-clad seniors clap along. I don't remember this.
You don't remember the E-Trade Monkey?
Then it ends with a hilariously meta tagline. A favorite of this expert's over at Adweek, this subversive 30-second spot originally aired in the 2000 Super Bowl. At the time, AdAds praised it as impossibly stupid and impossibly brilliant. I don't remember this. I don't... Does anybody remember it? You remember it?
I do, yeah. Okay. I remember the E-Trade Monkey being a thing. Like,
yeah.
That was kind of their mascot for a while, was the monkey.
Okay. Casper, Can't Sleep? From 2017. If you missed mattress company Casper's bizarre campaign, don't feel bad. The series of 15-second ads aired on a handful of channels at 2 a.m. targeting the insomniac audience with hypnotic and surreal imagery and a toll-free number. I was on the air, man. I didn't see it. As Adweek explains, viewers that call the number are met with a phone tree or equally nonsensical options like press 3 and travel back in time to the 90s or press 7 and learn the history of the cocktail wiener. What? Perhaps oddest of all, none of the options leads to a call to action or sales or a sales pitch, though you can eventually reach a rambling message that reveals Casper's real sales phone number. That seems like a lot of effort.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool.
Calvin Klein Obsession. Well, these. 1986. This was one of the first ads where it was like, what is Calvin? What is going on here? And I remember they did an unbelievably great parody of that commercial on SNL. I think it was Phil Hartman, Jan Hooks were in it. And it was very funny. But those first commercials, those Obsession commercials, Calvin Klein commercials were just like, they came out of nowhere. Like, what is this? So, Calvin Klein Obsession, weird. More weird commercials, 312-981-7200. And the best commercials, local or national, 312-981-7200. Yeah. Wildcard Wednesday, Nick DiGilio here. We are continuing on the show this morning, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. 3:30, we'll have another edition of Know Your Onion. That's where it's a game that we play, where Tom reads you a newspaper headline, and you have to decide whether it's free or it's real or it's from The Onion, which is a satirical newspaper. The real news in the real world is so weird right now, it's hard to tell. So you got to know your onion, and you can win prize. Blackhawks Express from last night's game. They lost, but Coach Q was in the building, and they did a nice tribute to him, and the crowd really loved it. So we'll play back that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And Wildcard Wednesday, who requested the Hogan's Heroes?
That's coming to us from Glenn.
Glenn wanted to hear the Hogan's Heroes theme. Okay. All right. There it is. We are talking about commercials. This is the anniversary of the airing of the classic 1984 Apple commercial. And it kind of ushered in this era of really doing bigger and crazier commercials. And that's what we're talking about. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Well, I have a least favorite ad running now, and it's a prime example of advertising, and it's that Limu Emo campaign.
I love that. I love those commercials. I love those commercials. I think they're hilarious.
I don't think they're funny. I don't think they adequately explain the tagline. They're just creepy.
Yeah. I don't know. I think those commercials are pretty funny, especially the one where they're where he says he's going to go, he take a nap in the car, and he wants to, if anything happens, then
right.
The emu goes nuts because something drops out of the and lands on the hood of the car.
It just drives me crazy.
Yeah,
because it doesn't really sell the concept of the insurance.
Yeah.
Just plain goofy.
Yeah, it is. All right, there's a lot of commercials out there like that. All right, Dave, thanks.
Thanks.
All right. I like the Limu Emu commercial. I think they're funny. When he's pecking at the window because he thinks it's another emu, that makes me laugh. And I remember the product. That's another thing that makes it kind of a success is that it's for Liberty, right? Yeah, it's Liberty Insurance. Is it Liberty Insurance?
Liberty Mutual.
Liberty Mutual.
Because it's Limu.
Oh, right. Liberty Mutual.
It's a
Limu
Emu.
It's a Limu Emu, right.
But then there's just like Liberty, and it goes Liberty, Liberty, Liberty.
Those are the J.K. Simmons Liberty. Commercials, right?
No, that's Farmers.
Farmers, right. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. That's the farm.
Yeah, we are farmers.
Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. The Liberty commercials. Oh, you know which one is funny? The Liberty. Have you seen the commercial with the bad actor trying to read the copy?
Yeah, and they dub him.
Hilarious. It's hilarious. That guy's geez. Very funny, by the way. The dude who plays that bad actor,
yeah,
he's very funny in that commercial.
Mm-hmm. I think my favorite auto commercials, especially for insurance, is Allstate Mayhem.
Mayhem.
And I think it's funny because most recently they brought Tina Fey into it, and the spokes guy, Mayhem, was on 30 Rock.
He was as her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
How you doing, dummy? And they bring that back in the commercial.
Love it.
They bring that back in the commercial. The dummy exchange, they bring that back in the commercial.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
All right. In the category of weird commercials, this has got to be one of the weirdest commercials ever. And I got to tell you, I love it. It's the Mountain Dew Puppy Monkey Baby. Do you remember the Mountain Dew Puppy Monkey Baby?
Unfortunately, yes.
Can you find audio on that one? I love that commercial. I don't care what anybody says. I love that commercial, but I can see why people are weirded out by it.
I might just chill tonight.
Puppy monkey baby. 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 Puppy monkey baby.
My guess is right now there is a good portion of people who are listening to the show who are freaking out. Like I can't, because it's just
terrifying.
Oh, I love it. I love that commercial. Finally, we'd be remiss if we left out the somewhat nightmare-inducing Super Bowl ad from Mountain Dew. The company, the soda company's 2016 ad for its Kickstarter drink, generated a massive response when it aired, earning 2.2 million online views and a 300,000 social media interactions just in one night. Viewers were split. Some found the ad and its CGI mascot to be hilarious, while others thought it was creepy, annoying, or stupid. But the overall consensus is it definitely grabbed your attention. Yeah, I'm on the pro side with Puppy Monkey Baby. I am definitely on the pro side with Puppy Monkey Baby. A bunch of texts are coming in. If you want to call us, we're talking about favorite or weird commercials that are on right now, commercials from the past, local ones. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. 262 says, how about the one with the animated Santa Claus coming down the hill on his Schick razor? Yeah, that used to be that was on yearly. They would run that annually during the holiday season. That's a classic. Black and white animated Santa Claus going down the Schick razor. 773, two cowboys standing watching the horses playing football. A sheep comes out, stands up, and shakes in front of them. One guy looks at the other and said, I didn't need to see that. It was for Budweiser. If I'm not mistaken, Budweiser is the company that always buys the most time on the Super Bowl. They spend the most money for ads during the Super Bowl. And they always load, they always load up. You know, they'll bring back the Clydesdales. They'll, you know, they'll do a whole bunch of new commercials. So they try to make funny ones. They try to do emotional ones. But yeah, if I'm not mistaken, it's always, it's pretty much consistent every year that Budweiser spends the most money on ads. 630 says, I've always cracked up at the Sears Optical commercial in which the lady mistakes a raccoon for her cat, bringing it into snuggle. Yeah, I've seen that. That's a good commercial. Hey, Nick, when Ditka was hired as head coach of the Bears, Dick Butkus was hired for radio in a TV commercial. They run into each other at Butch McGuire's. Ditka Butkus, it gave me the chills. 301 mentions it's a weird commercial, Puppy Monkey Baby. 708, Jeff Woodridge, I always found the commercial to find the best catheter for you was really weird. You know that catheter commercial with the cowboy, right? I'm a cowboy.
Yeah.
Not, you know.
We're not calf.
Yeah, he doesn't, he's an actor. He doesn't use a catheter,
no.
That guy. He's not a cowboy. He's just like, I'm a, he's wearing a cowboy hat and a vest, talking about catheters. I don't, it's no pain when I use this catheter. Now I'm a cowboy.
I just hate when he uses, he abbreviates it, when I calf. I'm like, this is just too much. This is too much, man. Yeah, when I'm out there on the old dusty trail, I like to calf. Please don't. I mean, I get it. The catheters are important. No, they're a piece of medical equipment.
But does anybody who does actually use a catheter call it, I'm going to calf?
Pardon me, darling. I need to go calf.
I got to go calf. And you have to say it exactly like that.
Yeah.
You got to go, honey, I'll be back in a minute because I got to go calf.
Did that make you want to use a catheter at all?
You're just like, well, well, you know what? That would be an interesting thing to do. Just to start cathing.
It would make being on the air much easier.
Oh, my God.
Get your WGN radio cath.
Yeah, when I cath. Yeah, I was just thinking about that. But that whole thing about this, just like, I'm a cow. I don't understand. How is, like, a cowboy character, why was that character chosen to advertise catheters? What did they think? What the guys in the boardroom who came up with the ideas, you know, for the commercial? Hey, I got an idea. You know what would sell catheters? You know how we could sell catheters hand over fist? Get a cowboy, get a dude playing a cowboy, and have him shorten it to cath. We will sell dozens of catheters within minutes.
It's like the Marlboro Man, but with a thing dingus.
With a cath.
With a catheter. It's genius.
Yeah. You know, when I'm out on the farm, it's important to calf. Nick DiGilio here. The show continues. If you want to jump in, we're talking about calf. No, we're talking about commercials, and we would love to hear from you. What are your favorite commercials, the weirdest, the best, the worst? Commercials in general. 312-981-7200. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. And the show continues.
It's the Great Space Coaster. Get on board on the Great Space Coaster. We'll explore a common ride of fantasy to a place where dreams fly fast and free.
With new friends and new things to see.
We'll spin you through the galaxy on the Great Space Coaster.
The Nick DiGilio Show continues here on a Wednesday morning, and it's Wednesday, all right. Wild Card Wednesday is you pick the songs that we play every single morning on this show that we hear from coming back from commercials and coming back from the news. And the theme this morning is Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything.
Give me Wild Card Wednesday.
Who chose the theme from the Great Space Coaster?
That is coming to us from Jimmy and Carrie.
Jimmy and Carrie. All right. I used to watch that show. Nick DiGilio here, continuing. Tom Hush is the producer. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we're talking commercials. This is the anniversary of the airing of the 1984 Apple commercial. And that got us to talking about commercials that we love, commercials that we hate, weird ones, great ones, classic ones. 312-981-7200. Here's Dorothy on WGN. Hi, Dorothy.
Yes, hi, Nick.
Hi.
I'm 88, and I listen to you every single time you're on the radio.
I appreciate that.
I love your program.
Thank you.
But my favorite commercial of all time is the one where the gentleman sells his Clydesdale horse on his farm.
Yeah.
And it goes to the parade.
Yeah.
And he sees the horse in the parade, and he thinks the horse doesn't remember him. And he feels very emotional and starts walking down the road. And then all of a sudden, in back of him, here comes his buddy, the Clydesdale.
Yeah.
That's a Budweiser commercial.
Yeah.
It's the best one there's ever been on the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's a great commercial. Is it like we were talking about, Budweiser spends, I think they spend the most money every year on ads. And they try to do a couple of funny ones, and they also try to do an emotional one. And that was one of those emotional ones, so. Yeah.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. That there.
Yeah.
Look forward to that every time you get to see it. And it happened to a one the year it was shown as the number one commercial.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Dorothy, thank you.
You're welcome, Nick. Have a wonderful day, and okay. God bless you and your family.
Oh, thank you, Dorothy. Take care. There you go. There's Dorothy. That was sweet. Yeah, the Clydesdale commercials. I mean, they're legendary. Tom, you ever been to the Budweiser, the Anheuser-Busch Brewery?
I have, actually, and I got to meet a Clydesdale. The mm-hmm. rest of them were out there on tour. So we were kind of bummed for a second, but there was this one giant Clydesdale that they kept there. And when me and my buddies went up to it, we were just like, how come this one's not out on tour?
We went to about 7 or 8 years ago. I hosted a bus ride trip to St. Louis for a bunch of listeners, and we went to a St. Louis Blues game and had a really cool dinner, and we met Weidemann, and Troy Murray and Weidemann showed up when we were at our, when we had our, because we had two, it included like two meals, and we stayed in a hotel right within walking distance of the stadium, and it included the Budweiser tour, so we went on the Budweiser tour, and it was great. It's a great tour. And I was a drinking man back then, and I enjoyed the fact that you got a couple of beers, a good size, not like mm-hmm. a sample,
mm-hmm.
good sized beers.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. They take care of you out there.
Absolutely. But I, the Clydesdales were all there. They were outside.
They're
outside. You go into the stables. They actually take you into the stables.
Yeah.
But they were out there. They're beautiful. They're beautiful horses, man.
Well, the one we met, we were just like, why isn't he with the rest of them? And they were like, well, he's a little too big for the saddle, so he doesn't get to go out on tour. So what do you do with
that?
They said this one we're keeping to go out to stud.
Ah, sure.
So he's the real winner of the Clydesdales.
It's funny because, you know, like, I didn't realize that they kept the Clydesdales there.
Yeah.
I didn't know it until, you know, I heard about it. Probably about a couple of days, because I told somebody I was going to St. Louis, and I'm going on the Anheuser-Busch tour, and they're like, oh, man, I hope the Clydesdales are there, because it's disappointing if they're not. Like, you go into the stables,
kind of,
and there's no horses, but they weren't in the stables. They were outside.
Yeah, they had them just...
They had a fenced-off area.
Yeah, just getting a little exercise out there. God, they're beautiful horses.
Beautiful, massive horses. Did you know that I used to ride horses? Did I ever tell you this?
What?
I was made fun of by the by my old producer and Esmeralda, because I was an equestrian when I was a kid.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Yeah,
an equestrian.
When I was a kid, I rode horses.
Really?
Yeah.
And did you have the little?
I had the hat. I had the crop. I had the boots. I'm not kidding.
No, I believe you.
I jumped horses over hurdles. I ran them.
Did you ever try your hand at dressage?
No.
You didn't do the horse prancing.
I did not do the horse prancing. No,
I did the real man's work.
Yeah, I started doing this because my cousin was way into horses, and I got into it because of her. And I can't remember, the people can call in. I can't remember the name of the stables where I took my lessons and rode my horses. I want to say it was near Norwich. It was near Norwich. Because my cousins lived in Norwich at the time. They lived in Harwood Heights. And it was like Forest Preserve Drive and something. Somebody will know. I think it was called like Happy Stables or something like that. This was in the 70s. But no, I rode horses a lot. And I've always talked about this before. Like if you go like on a trail horseback riding, that's not horseback riding. I just want to let everybody know that's not horseback riding. That's like a looped up horse who's just following another horse's tail, and you're just going glump, glump, glump. That's not horseback riding. You know, horseback riding is you're on the horse and you ride it, and it is the most powerful thing in the world.
What was your? Did you have a favorite horse?
Thunder.
His name. Yeah. Did you feed him little sugar cubes?
I did. I fed him
apples, carrots.
Yeah. No. I mean, yeah.
Wow.
And you know, I've been bucked. I've had been thrown by horses, like, But there, I'll tell you something, man. There's nothing when you are galloping a full gallop on the back of a horse.
Yeah,
it is unbelievably exhilarating and exciting and scary.
I believe
and awesome. So,
well, for what it's worth, I used to be a competitive Irish dancer. So, open shirts and everything.
Yeah, but
I got made fun of for that. Oh. So I will not make fun of you for riding horses.
Okay. Yeah, but no, Dan Chagru and Esmeralda, they would not stop making fun of me because I did that. There are pictures somewhere of me with the full hat, crop, whole thing. So, hey, it's the Nick DiGilio Show continuing right here on 720 WGN. We're talking about commercials. What are your favorite commercials? Tom Hush is producing. I am your host. And the phone number and text number is open. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200 for your favorite commercials. 312-981-7200. 815 says, Jeff, it's Jeff from Crystal Lake. Michael Jordan and Larry Bird playing horse for McDonald's. That was a great commercial.
Great.
That was a truly great commercial.
Definitely makes you want McDonald's.
Yeah. And I believe that's when they were serving the McJordan. They had the McJordan for a while, which was a great sandwich. If I remember correctly, it was on an onion roll. It was barbecue sauce. It was basically a quarter pounder patty. With barbecue sauce, the liquid cheese, not a slice of cheese, like, you know, the cheese sauce, you know, the cheese like sauce. Nacho, like, okay, like they yeah. find on nachos or you yeah. find on Philly cheesesteak,
mm-hmm.
on an onion roll. It was really good. Also, current commercial with Gordon Ramsay serving food. Say, I love that commercial. I don't know what it's for, but it's Gordon Ramsay, and he's serving. He's in like a Costco, and he's serving. He said, could you find the audio for this one? I'm not going to be able to help you, though, because I don't know what the ad's for. But it's Gordon Ramsay serving food samples at a Costco. And a couple comes up. And, you know, he's got his chef jacket on. And he's all, you know, he's got the towel over his shoulder like he always does. And he smacks the guy's hand for picking up the sample without using it. Use the toothpick! And then his girlfriend does a British accent and goes, use the toothpick!
Is that
quesadillas? Gordon Ramsay handing out samples. Seems like just an okay use of your culinary talents, dude.
Yeah, it is, smart guy. Almost like having a brand new iPhone, but not pairing it with AT&T.
That's true, Gordon Ramsay.
Hey, fingers! It's not a buffet. Use the cocktail stick.
Use the cocktail stick.
Chef. Get the most from your amazing
Use the cocktail stick. AT&T, that's what it's for.
Yeah, it was an AT&T ad.
Yeah. Those are funny. Those okay is not good enough. Those are really
pretty
funny.
Good. Yeah,
and that's isn't the AT&T also? They've got the guy who's in he plays AT&T and he's like in their tub.
Well, no, that's a competitor making fun of AT&T.
Oh, right. So I think it's like Verizon. I think it's Xfinity.
Yeah, it's like it's Comcast Xfinity making fun of
that's
AT&T.
That's a funny the one where he's like, who are those people out on our front lawn? Oh, they're just trying to. They're just trying to get your password.
They're just trying to hack into your network.
Hack into your network. But can't you do anything about it? Hey, I'm sensing a little attitude here. Also, the one where he's standing, the guy talks into the camera, says, yeah, I've been with AT&T now for this long. And he's in the kitchen. And again, the guy playing AT&T is guzzling milk out of his container with the fridge door open. Yeah. Gordon Ramsay, man. 630 says, a commercial for Ronco, which advertises useless inventions, the inside the eggshell egg scrambler. You ever seen that, Tom?
I have not.
No? It's this device where you can stick like a little pin inside the eggshell, and it will scramble the egg from within so that when you crack it, it's already pre-scrambled. How about the egg, eggshell remover? Because, you know, it's such a daunting task to, you know, when you hard boil an egg, it's so difficult to get the shell off. 224 says, the movie sucked, but the Taco Bell commercials for Godzilla, where the Taco Bell dog is trying to trap Godzilla. I think I need a bigger box. Here, lizard, lizard, lizard. Can you find that one? I love the Taco Bell dog. So does Bobby D, by the way. That's Robert Duvall. I did a shot of tequila with Robert Duvall one time. I'm not kidding. I did. And the cheers that he did, the toast that he did was, yo quiero Taco Bell. And then we talked about how much he loved the Taco Bell dog.
Godzilla's hiding, and it's up to you to find him. Just buy a medium or larger drink. If you find Godzilla, use your decoder to reveal what you've won. I think I need a bigger box.
Great ad, great movie.
Oh, the movie was terrible.
Don't do this to me, man.
Best part of the movie were those commercials. Terrible movie, man. And as a Godzilla fan, you should not support that movie. As a Godzilla fan who knows Godzilla and loves them, can't support that movie.
It was the first one I ever saw.
That's the first Godzilla movie you ever saw, was the Roland Emmerich nonsense?
Yeah, again, 1993 here, man.
Yeah, I understand that, but how is that the first one you saw? Because Godzilla movies were...
I know, but I didn't grow up in a Godzilla household.
Oh, man.
Because that came out, what, 98?
Something around that
1998.
Yeah, it was late 90s.
And it took me by storm, and then it made me want to watch all the old Godzilla movies. So I would go to the video store and rent all the old Godzilla movies.
Yeah, all right. Here, lizard, lizard, lizard. We're talking commercials here. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We've got emotional and touching commercials that we're going to get to as well. What are some of those? When I was on Justin's show last week, defending Risky Business against one of the worst movies ever made, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I was talking about how emotional I get now. I cry at everything. We were talking about Magnolia being my favorite movie, and that every time I watch it, I cry about five times during the movie and bawl my eyes out at the end. And there was a commercial, and I talked about it. I think I've talked about it with you, Tom. Okay, it was an iPhone commercial, an early iPhone, where you can actually FaceTime with somebody, but you can't, you know, you see them. And so it was like one of the early ones. And the commercial was a father talking to his daughter, and the daughter wouldn't smile. And he was trying to convince her to smile. Because she had just gotten braces. And so, you know, you see him on the phone and her on the phone in the little picture within a picture. And they're having this conversation. And he's attempting to get her to smile. And she won't because she's so sad that she has braces. And then at the very end of the commercial, she smiles. And you can see the braces. And he says, you look beautiful. I'm getting teary-eyed now. I'm not kidding. That commercial destroyed me. And I don't have daughters. I never had a daughter. And the other commercial, also father-daughter related, is that damn gum commercial where she's a little girl. He gives her a stick of gum and then makes like a little origami, like an origami horse out of the foil that the gum is wrapped in and gives it to her. And so they show this montage of, you know, she's going off to kindergarten. He gives her a stick of gum to make her feel better and does an origami horse out of the foil. She goes off to prom, she goes off to college, all that stuff. And she's leaving for college at the end of this commercial. And they're bringing boxes and stuff out to load up the car. And one of the boxes falls, and out falls hundreds of these foil origami horses, meaning she saved them for, like, all this time, like 20 years. It's that's a commercial that just kills me. So, okay, let's do some weather. And we'll continue with the show. We're talking commercials. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
I thought you'd listen to my reason. But now I see
Nick DiGilio Show continuing here on 720 WGN. It's continuing. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. Tom Hush is the producer. I am your host. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You request the songs every morning on the show that we play coming back from breaks and news. And today's theme is Wild Card Wednesday. Any artist, anything. Yeah.
Wild Card Wednesday.
Okay. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Brian up in Michigan.
Okay.
Little small faces there. All or nothing.
Okay. We are talking about commercials. And also coming up, Know Your Onion is coming up after 3:30. And Know Your Onion is a game that we play. Tom Hush is your host. And you call up, and we get two contestants. Each plays a solo round. And what happens is Tom will read you a news headline, and you have to decide whether it is real or it is from The Onion, which is a fake newspaper, satirical. It's very hard because the news is so weird in the real world. Sometimes it's difficult to tell what's the difference between a real news headline and The Onion. So Know Your Onion coming up, and prizes are at stake. Yeah, Blackhawks Express at 3:45 from last night's game. The return of Q to the UC. We've been talking about commercials. Tom, did you want to play one? Didn't you want to play one?
Well, yeah, I wanted to play one that I think is honestly one of the most legendary of all time. This came out when I was just a kid, and my dad showed it to me, and we used to laugh for literally hours watching this. And naturally, it's the Budweiser Wasop commercial.
Yeah. I'm having a bud.
True. True.
Wasop!
Yo, who's that?
Yo, pick up the phone.
Hello?
What's that?
What's up?
Yo, where's Dookie?
Yo, Dookie!
Yo.
What's that?
What's that?
Hold on. Hello?
What's up, it's still funny, man. It's still funny. I know people who got sick of it, and some people who didn't even find it funny the first time they saw it. I still think it's funny. The first time I saw it, I almost laughed my butt off the first time I saw it.
I just thought, yo, Duque, pick up the phone.
I think it was because it became such, you know, a ubiquitous catchphrase. Like, everybody.
Hey, do you want to talk about like early internet memes?
Yeah.
This is it. My dad would show me people who had recut it with like the Justice League and it's Batman calling Superman.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's hilarious.
I still think it's funny. I don't care. I understand people, you know, being sick of it and maybe not thinking it was fun, but I still think it's hilarious. But it's like, you know, I mean, I can understand people getting sick of it because everybody was saying "What's up?" during that time. You couldn't go anywhere. You go to bars and people are like, "What's that?" It was like when that damn Borat movie became popular. Every single moron had a Borat impression.
My wife.
Yeah, everybody was doing it. And I hate that movie. I hate Borat.
Oh, boo.
And it's not funny, man. I hate Borat. And, you know, but it was everywhere. Like every white numbskull in their 20s. Like I remember one night I was at the Green Mill and these guys would not stop doing their Borat impressions. They would not stop. And I was like, I'm going to kill these guys.
And that's the last place you should really be testing out your Borat. That place is sacred ground.
It is. Don't be coming in here to the Green Mill and doing a bad Borat imitation. Get out of here.
You should be fined $100 and told to leave.
I remember, you know, when I the first time I met and interviewed Tom Green, how much, you know, the Jackass guys owe you residuals, and Sacha Baron Cohen should cut you a check right now. And so much of that stuff in Borat is staged. It's staged. I don't know. But anyway, Borat commercial, or the Borat impression, I can understand people getting sick of "What's up?" if it's the same frequency. What about emotional commercials? Like, I am a boy and his dog, Duck. Do you remember this? This one falls squarely into coming of age, life is short category. This time it's for dog lovers. Starring a cute little boy and a dog named Duck. We watch as the two grow older side by side and eventually learn how the pup has got his unusual name. No, Iams isn't exactly breaking new ground here, but yes, it's emotionally manipulative, and yes, you cry anyway. I don't remember that one at all. I don't remember that. So, but there are a lot of commercials that where they try to pull on your heartstrings. They say the best Super Bowl commercials, they've got Hey Kid, Catch. That's the Mean Joe Green commercial, which is legendary. Monster.com, When I Grow Up. Filmed in stark black and white, the commercial parodied the ads for companies like what Nike's known for, with kids matter-of-factly stating they wanted to be replaced on a whim, claw their way to middle of management. This is one of my favorite commercials of all time. Tom, the Volkswagen commercial where the kid thinks he has the Force.
Oh, yeah.
I love that commercial. The kid...
He dressed up as Darth Vader.
He's dressed as Darth Vader, and he goes out, and they've got they can start the car from inside the house. And they do it, and the kid, like, freaks because he's like, he thinks he has the Force, and he actually started the car. That's a great commercial. All right, wrapping it up here. 708, Eagle Man Insurance. Yeah, of course, the eagle legs and egg on the car. Look at those low rates.
I've got something for you.
Trucker Mark Geritol, my wife, I think I'll keep her. Oh, sure. JG Wentworth, 877 cash now, on the bus with a Viking. Hey, Nick, how about the Kmart commercial where all the different customers, especially the older ones, claim that they just shipped their pants?
I loved that one.
I bet you did.
Oh, my God. I'm crying.
Okay. All right. We're continuing the show with the news, which is up next.
I've been in the right place. But it must have been the wrong time. I done said the right thing, but it must have used the wrong line. I've been on the right trail, but I must have used the wrong car. Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what's good for.
So this is played when Mitch is getting drunker and drunker at the party at the Moon Tower. That would be in Dazed and Confused. I've seen Dazed and Confused, the movie, a few times, so I can kind of tell you where every song is in the movie. And there are a lot of songs in that movie. That's Party at the Moon Tower. All right. Play a little foosball. All right. Nick DiGilio here. We're continuing the show. We're here till 4 o'clock. It is Wednesday. At 4 o'clock, our good friends over at Bradley Plays, WGN-TV Morning News, will be on with us from 4 to 5. And then Bob Surratt has your morning drive on this Wednesday. Wildcard Wednesday has been underway this morning. Here's the deal. Every morning on this show, you pick the songs that we play coming back from commercials and news. And it's always you. And there's a different theme every morning. And this morning, it's Wildcard Wednesday, which means it's any artist, any song, anything. Wildcard Wednesday! Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Steve in Iowa.
All right, Steve.
Pardon me, not Iowa. Omaha.
Omaha. There's a little difference there.
Yeah, they're a little far apart. Pardon me. Steve in Omaha.
So welcome back. Nick DiGilio here, continuing till 4. Tom Hush is the producer. We're keeping you company. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We would love to hear from you. And so, I'm sorry, I was a little distracted because Jennifer Lopez is on How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah, she appears as like a dating guru.
Okay, because I just looked up and I'm like, what is she doing on How I Met Your Mother? Okay.
Her and Neil Patrick Harris go at it, you know.
I saw him fall off a stool.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Did you watch that show on a regular basis?
Religiously, yeah.
So did my last producer. So did Dan. Yeah.
I hated the last episode.
The last season is actually pretty bad, but the last episode particularly.
Roughly the last three seasons of that show are pretty much unwatchable.
Yeah. How long was it on? It was on a long time.
Like 9 years.
I never watched it.
Almost 10 years, yeah.
I watch it in the morning with no sound.
I used to be on like the internet forums.
No.
Back in 2004. I'm like 10 years old.
Okay.
I'm on internet forums talking about Ted Mosby.
Who's that?
He's the main character.
Okay. I don't know. I like Kobe
Smulders.
I think she's great. I love her. I think she's great.
Allison Hannigan, Jason Segel.
Yeah, no, it's a great cast. Yeah. It's a really good cast. And, you know, and Neil Patrick Harris, you know, I remember when Harold and Kumar came out. And, you know, Neil Patrick Harris in that movie, in the first one, was unbelievably funny.
Unhinged.
I mean, unbelievably funny. And that was like the second part of his career. I personally think, you know, everybody talks about the big Neil Patrick Harris comeback, you know, from kid actor that nobody wanted to see anymore. I personally think it started with Starship Troopers. That's just me. I think it started with Starship Troopers. That's how I like to look at it. It's Afraid! One of my favorite. Okay, so we were talking earlier in the show, right at the top of the show. There's a weird cold snap in Florida right now. Getting down to the 30s, which is unheard of. So there's a phenomenon happening right now where iguanas are falling out of trees because when it gets colder, their blood doesn't flow as much and they slow down. Sometimes they can't move and they fall out of a tree. So iguanas, and like big ones between 3 and 4 feet long, are falling out of trees in Florida because of the weird cold snap. So we're talking about weird weather events. And if you want to jump in here with any weird weather events that you remember, 312-981-7200. Weather happens all the time, and usually we don't even notice it unless it's a major inconvenience. It's a shame because Mother Nature sometimes throws us a major curveball. That's when things get really cool, and here's some of the weirdest weather events ever. You guys, if you want to jump in, I'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. The locust plague of 1874. That's terrifying. Imagine being a farmer in the American Midwest in the summer of 1874. You have a lot to worry about, and you're about to have a lot more. You look up in the sky one hot, dry July morning, and you see a black cloud approaching your farm. It's not smoke. It's a cloud of locusts. That's terrifying.
Well, that was happening in, I want to say, Ethiopia recently. There was a swarm of locusts, and a plane had to land in the swarm, and they took a picture afterward, and it was just spattered with, like, guts and all, you know, all the little...
Like when you're driving on the highway, doing, you know, you're doing a road trip, and yet your windshield and your grill are loaded with insects.
Yeah. It was unsettling.
That's terrifying. How many locusts were there? Estimates between... Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Do you hear... Did you read this?
Mm-hmm.
Estimates vary. How many locusts? From 124 billion up to 12.9 or 12.5 trillion. Oh, this is just ridiculous. They ate their way across the Midwest, cutting a swath 110 miles wide, 1,800 miles long. That summer was hot and dry, which is perfect for locusts. Prairie plants adapt to drought conditions by building up a concentration of sugars, which locusts loved. They ate, they multiplied, they ate more. Oh, man. I can't even.
Yeah. Well, that's one of those things that makes you feel really small. You kind of forget.
Yeah.
Just, you know, there's like, oh, wow, there's almost 8 billion people on the planet. Yeah, there's a lot more bugs than there are us.
As the locust formed a plague terrifyingly documented by the Nebraska State Historical Society, whole families starved to death as the hungry little monsters caused a ridiculous amount of damage to the farming industry. The greedy insects ate wooden tools, leather saddles, and even clothes that were still being worn. This is freaking me out. Chickens devoured the locusts, but this turned their eggs into being worn. Chickens to meat and oily and meaty, oily, disgusting eggs. Dead bugs and bug poop coated everything with what looked like an oil slick, and many families fled the Midwest. Then what happened? The Rocky Mountain grasshopper went extinct around the turn of the century, which is a huge relief to anyone currently living in the center of the nation. 1874. That's out of the Bible, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's like right out of the Bible.
I've seen the Prince of Egypt. I know how this goes.
That's like Ten Commandment stuff.
I'm sure Charlton Heston.
Heston was probably there.
Yeah. he was already like 30 or something like that. Because as far as I know, he was ageless.
Do you remember God, who did Charlton Heston on SCTV? I can't remember who did Charlton Heston, but it might have been Dave Thomas. It could have been Dave Thomas. But the imitation was because Charlton Heston would always go, damn. You know, he would do that. But the imitation consisted of him being shot in the shoulder. Like Dave Thomas would pretend that he got shot in the shoulder and then grab his shoulder where he got shot and go, damn.
I think it was Joe Flaherty.
No, that's not SCTV. No, wait, yeah, Joe Flaherty. You're right. It's Joe Flaherty.
Yeah.
It's Joe Flaherty. Damn. That was his... pretending that he just got shot in the shoulder. That's how specific that imitation was. He was every time he did Charlton Heston, he got shot in the shoulder. Damn. All right. More weird weather. Nick DiGilio show continues here on 720 WGN. We are weekday nights at from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number that you can use to call or text us or to request a Wild Card Wednesday request. Let me ask you, Tom. This is Tom Hush, is my producer, and I'm your host.
Mm-hmm.
You spent, do they have like monuments to the Bay City Rollers in Scotland?
I've never seen one, but they are very well beloved.
Oh yeah,
the Bay City Rollers are a big deal in Scotland.
Yeah, they were a big deal here for a while.
Yeah,
I mean they had their moments. They had a couple of years where they were the first Bay City Rollers album was massive in this country. Mm-hmm. But I know that they were beloved in Scotland. I just didn't know whether they had like monuments or streets named after them or.
Well, there's like a subset of bands that the minute you mention them in Scotland, everybody's a fan. And so Bay City Rollers,
yeah.
The Proclaimers.
Oh, they only had the one hit from that stupid movie here in America.
In America.
Yeah, they just said, I will walk 500 miles. What was that stupid movie it was in with Johnny Depp and Mary Stewart, Benny and June.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I don't like that movie.
It's terrible.
That's a great song,
and they've
got
a lot of
they got a lot of great songs. But the Proclaimers are up there for usually the younger crowd. If you mention Franz Ferdinand,
oh sure,
because they were really big in the 2000s for Scotland. There's a ton of acts that came out of Scotland that a lot of people don't realize are Scottish. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
Bay City Rollers,
they're definitely Scottish.
Till I die.
Well, I mean, you know, all you had to do was look at how they dressed. Nothing but plaid, my friend. Nothing but plaid.
You got to use it to your advantage.
Yeah. Who requested the Bay City Rollers on this Wild Card Wednesday?
And it's coming to us from Dino.
All right, Dino. All right, we're talking about weird weather events from history. The last thing that we were talking about was terrifying, the whole locust thing. How about this, 1816, the year that summer didn't come. In April of 1815, Mount Tambora in Indonesia erupted with a massive explosion that sent clouds of volcanic ash into the atmosphere. Much of the northern hemisphere was covered with a shroud of dirt and dust that refused to settle, and in June of 1816 it became clear that something was very wrong. The cold weather of the winter months just didn't end. Frost killed crops, rain and snow persisted throughout the summer months. It was the year without a summer, and with snow in June came starvation, food riots, and the destruction of entire communities, rising food costs, and an increase in crime. USA Today blames it for one of the deadliest outbreaks of typhus in history. While cold seized the northern hemisphere, monsoons ravaged the southern hemisphere, spawning cholera epidemics and killing tens of thousands of people. My God. Ireland saw its worst year of famine, and even more bizarre, China was forced to abandon growing rice for the summer and instead plant the more profitable poppy, fueling what would become the opium trade. Good Lord.
And wait, just wait, there's more.
Strangely, in the face of all that devastation, other things happened. The Center of Science Education links the rising costs of keeping horses to development of the bicycle as a mode of transportation you didn't have to feed. And The Guardian collected a whole list of brilliant artistic achievements written in the gloomy, sunless summer, including Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, Byron's poems Darkness and Prometheus, and masterpieces by Beethoven and Schubert. At least we got some good art out of the mess.
Yeah. Wow. That's the big reason that Mary Shelley and all of them were in that castle telling stories, because there was nothing else to do except get drunk in castles and write.
Yeah. Wow. That's pretty terrifying as well. Jeez, and we complain when it rains.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How about this? The night of the big wind.
Is that the night after I have Taco Bell?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, hold on a minute. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. All right.
Thank you. Thank you.
Somebody drank their Henny Youngman juice. This is January 6th, 1839. Winters in Ireland. You know, by the way, this volcano thing that caused this damage. When I went to Ireland, do you remember when that Icelandic volcano erupted?
Yeah, because I was traveling. I was traveling to the UK at the time.
Okay, so the Icelandic volcano, and then it was the ash was everywhere, and you can't fly through that.
Right.
So they were canceling flights, international flights, left and right. So about this happened. This it was at its height less than a week before we were leaving for Ireland, and I hate to fly. I'm terrified of flying. And now I'm, like, doubly terrified because the plane's going to crash because we're going to fly through a volcanic ash. So they cleared us, you know, like a couple of days before we left for our trip, they started flights again at O'Hare. And so we were able to fly out. We get to Ireland. It starts up again. We're in Ireland for about 3 weeks. It starts up again. And there was a chance that we were going to be stuck in Ireland. Now, that's fine with me because if I'm going to be stuck somewhere, it may as well be like Ireland because it's the greatest. But then they cleared it again like the day before we were leaving. And so I was just terrified on the way there and on the way back because I hate to fly. It's a long flight. It's an 8-hour flight. And now I've got this added paranoia about some volcanic ash that's going to get into the engines and we're all going to blow up. Did it affect your travel at all?
Yeah, we got stuck in Reykjavik.
Well, that's another place that wouldn't. It's not too bad to be stuck in.
Yeah, except it's Reykjavik, Iceland.
Yeah.
So it was really, people were freaking out.
Like, yeah, well, you were there. Yeah. I mean, that's where it was.
It was very strange. And I was traveling with my younger brothers. My mom was not with us. It was it was me and my two younger brothers. Now, they were not children.
Yeah, yeah.
But keeping them busy was a little bit of a chore and trying to keep them.
That was 10 years ago.
Yeah, 10 years ago.
About 10 years ago.
It was wild.
Yeah.
So I was... What, 16 going on 17.
It was pretty goofy. Right there.
Mm-hmm.
Nick DiGilio show continuing here on 720 WGN. And here's the night of the big wind. Winters in Ireland are always a little dodgy as far as winds go, but on January 6th, 1839, the worst storm in recorded history hit, and it was a doozy. The entire country was hit by wind speeds up to 115 miles per hour, and when dawn came, the sun rose on a devastated landscape. The Irish Meteorological Service, MET, collected some of the most chilling eyewitness accounts of the night. A quarter of Dublin's buildings were damaged. It was described as a sacked city. Fires spread across County Longford, with winds picking up fires and dropping them from the sky over the rest of the countryside. Fields were stripped and hundreds of thousands of trees fell. Tales say that water and fish were picked up and hurled miles across the countryside, and that salt from the ocean doused fields in the center of the country. The Dublin Evening Post reported a red aurora borealis over the city, and it's thought the reporter mistook fires in the sky for the northern lights. It's probably a good thing they were confused. The sky is raining fire upon you feels decidedly more apocalyptic. That's another terrifying one. All of these are crazy, these insane weather events. How about Black Sunday, April 14th, 1935? You've probably heard Midwestern America called the Dust Bowl. The National Weather Service says that name was born in the wake of a storm that swept across the prairie on April 14, 1935. It started in Oklahoma and Texas at around 4 p.m., and those who saw it said a wall of blackness moved across the plain. That black cloud was just dirt swept along by 60-mile-per-hour winds, and those winds brought the kind of darkness that prevents you from seeing your hand in front of your face. Accounts from the time claim the sun disappeared for hours, and some small animals like birds and mice even died. One man reportedly went blind, and many believed it was end times. There had been dozens of dust storms in years leading up to that moment, but none as severe as this. Dirt and dust filled the air in a storm that was hundreds of miles wide, stretched thousands of feet in the air, and as people sought shelter and hoped that the sun would rise, Woody Guthrie wrote, "So long, it's been good to know ya." It started because of a series of events that shows just how damaging mankind can be. Farming is pretty hard without water, but farmers thought working the land would bring rains. Rain follows the plow, they said. It was true by sheer coincidence for a little dust, but when the drought hit in 1931, profitable farms grew nothing but dust. Wow. All right. Okay. It is time to call in. We want you to call in to be a contestant on Know Your Onion. 312-981-7200. First two people through will be our two contestants. You will each play a solo round. Tom will read you a news headline. You have to guess whether it's from whether it's real or from The Onion. And the phone lines are open right now, so call us right now, 312-981-7200. I got some weather for you. We got some breaks in the morning, clouds, little peak of sun on the way, overcast skies in the afternoon, blustery, cold, low in the mid-30s, a high in the low to mid-30s. Some accumulation is possible for some snow on Thursday morning, nighttime low near Thursday or near 30. Clouds and snow possible tomorrow, mixing with rain at times, especially in the afternoon, a high in the mid-30s. Snow overnight, a low near freezing. For Friday, snow likely. Afternoon mix of wintry precipitation is possible. We got a high in the mid-30s. Nighttime snow accumulation is likely. Saturday, cloudy and cold, breezy with periods of snow continuing, high in the low 30s. The snow will end in the evening, and it'll be about a low near 30 for the overnight hours. Extensive cloudiness on Sunday. Some occasional breaks in the clouds are possible. A little bit warmer with a high mid to upper 30s. Mostly cloudy overnight with light west winds. Low near 30. It's currently 24 degrees at O'Hare. It's 25 at Midway. 26 at the lakefront. And, yeah, we're continuing here. And we're going to continue with Know Your Onion coming up. Nick DiGilio Show here on 720 WGN, and we are here until 4. The show continues now. I'm your host. Tom Hush is the producer, and we are going to get back to weird weather events coming up, and we also have a Blackhawks Express to play from last night's game. But right now we're going to play a round of Know Your Onion. Know Your Onion is a game show that we do here. Tom is your host, and it's the idea is... Tom reads a news headline, and you have to guess whether it's real or from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. That's the simple rules. Tom, you want to start this?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
There we go. It's amazing. Every week, 60,000 people cram into this room and that band. That lovely band.
Remarkable.
It's unbelievable. All right, so you got the idea. We've got our players, and here is our first contestant is Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right, buddy, how you doing?
All right.
All right.
Fine.
You're familiar with The Onion, yes?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's do this. Tom?
All right, let's get this music going. All right, Mike, your first headline... Conor McGregor credits excellent pre-fight shape to his routine of hurling heavy objects in public spaces. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Sounds like The Onion.
Let's see.
Excellent!
Very good.
Good job, Mike. Nice job, man. One for one.
Won that fight in 40 seconds.
Yeah, I know. Could you imagine the people who paid for it?
Oh, I can.
That always goes through my mind whenever a fight ends in like 20 seconds or something. You know, people paid the tickets for ringside at, you know, in that place. How much of that people paid the pay-per-view? I mean, it's just, it's crazy. All right.
All right, Mike, your next headline. A Cottage Grove church to usher out gray-haired members in effort to attract more young parishioners. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Real.
Let's see. Very good. That is a real headline.
They want younger parishioners.
Yes. That's coming to us from TwinCities.com. A prayer for survival rose from the back of the church last Sunday. A church wants to attract more young families. The present members, most of them over 60 years old, will be invited to worship somewhere else.
Oh, man.
A memo recommends that they stay away for 2 years and then consult the pastor about reapplying.
That's insane. That's completely nuts.
That's the news, baby. That's the news.
Oh, my God. All right, Mike, 2 for 2. You get one more, you win.
Okay.
All right.
All right, Mike, your next headline. A whoopee cushion in the crowd causes a disruption at the Masters snooker final. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Yeah, The Onion.
Let's see.
No.
That's a real headline.
That's real? Somebody brought a whoopee cushion?
Yes, yes. Play momentarily stopped at Alexandra Palace. Looks like someone has planted a whoopee cushion inside the arena, and it keeps going up, making a sound, tweeted BBC journalist Shamoon Hafez. The match between Ali Carter and Bingham was briefly halted early in the fifth frame, with referee Brendan Moore asking somebody in the crowd to stop that now, please.
That's hilarious. All right, you're 2-1, Mike. 2-1. Here we go.
All right, let's go to your next headline, Mike. Okay, Kellyanne Conway suggests that Martin Luther King Jr. would have traveled to Ukraine for dirt on Biden.
Is that real?
All right, I don't know. Maybe. Let's see. That is the onion.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. All right, Mike, you're a winner, my friend. Good job.
Thank you.
You've won the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. You can visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Hold the line, okay, Mike?
All right.
Thanks, buddy. Mike is on hold, and that was good.
Yeah, good job,
Whoopee
Mike.
Cushion
at a snooker tournament.
At a snooker tournament.
I just love that. The referee just said, stop that now,
stop
please.
Stop that now, please. Okay. All right. Are we ready for our second contestant?
Let's go for it.
All right, this is Curtis on WGN. Hi, Curtis.
Oh, hello. How you doing?
All right. Are you familiar with The Onion?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, then, all you got to do is figure out whether these news headlines that are going to be read to you are real or from The Onion. All right.
Okay.
All right, Curtis. Your first headline, House okays legislation barring companies from microchipping their employees. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's real.
Let's see.
Excellent!
That's
very good, Curtis.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Yeah, that's State Representative Alan Morrison speaks Tuesday in the Indiana House about his legislation barring companies from requiring workers be microchipped as a condition of employment. The Indiana House overwhelmingly agreed that employers should not be permitted to force Hoosier workers to be microchipped.
No kidding.
Yeah, you would hope so.
No kidding.
Come on.
Jeez. Oh, that's terrifying. Curtis, nice job. You're 1-for-1.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right. Here we go. Your next headline. It's discouraging that we've reached this level. Portland bike theft task force officer has his bike stolen. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's real.
Let's see. Very nice.
Somebody stole his bike?
Yes. A Portland bike theft task force officer had his own bicycle stolen. Officer Dave Sanders is the first to acknowledge the irony. He has been working for years to prevent bike thefts across Portland. Sanders said he was running late for a grand jury and left his U-lock at the office. And when he came back out, his bike was gone and the cuffs were left dangling from the rack.
Oh, man. That's hilarious. Okay.
All right.
So, Curtis, man, one more and you're a winner.
Oh, okay.
All right. Your next headline, this could be the winner. Canadian man wishes there was some way to pay his doctor for all the hard work he did. Is that real or is that The Onion?
The Onion.
Let's see.
Oh, I like that.
That's very nice good, job. Curtis. That's yeah. Hilarious. That's hilarious. That's so The Onion.
Yeah. Some of them are a little bit of giveaways.
Yeah. All right. Curtis, you're a winner as well.
Oh, okay.
All right. You got yourself a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Need to hold on, okay? Hold the line.
Thank you.
There you go. Curtis and Mike, both winners this morning on Know Your Onion. We will do it again next Wednesday. We do it every Wednesday morning after 3:30, and it's easy for you to participate. You just call up when we tell you to at 312-981-7200. Answer those questions. See if those newspaper or news headlines are real or from The Onion. And if you do that, you're a winner. Okay. Let's talk a little more about these weird weather events that have taken place in the world. And so, yeah, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'd love to hear from you. And so here's the next one. Black Monday, April 13, 1360. If you were paying attention in high school when you read The Merchant of Venice, you might remember a bit where Shakespeare talked about Black Monday. If you don't, according to Historic UK, he's talking about Easter Monday in 1360, which you'll remember from history class was during the Hundred Years' War. At this point, Edward III had already stepped on Paris and was marching on Chartres in France, and he camped outside when a deadly storm, more badass than the French army could ever hope to be, came to town. Night fell, the temperature dropped. In 30 minutes, freezing rain, falling ice balls, and panic caused by thunder, lightning, and raging winds had killed hundreds of men and thousands of horses. The brief storm was so fierce that Edward took it as a sign from God and signed a peace treaty with the French a few weeks later. The storm's carnage was described as that of a battle by contemporary writers, but any belief that God was using the storm to encourage peace soon crumbled. Another war started up just a few years later. Black Monday. Boy, these things are terrifying. How about this? Oh, I don't like the sound of this one. Satan's Storm from June 15th, 1960. Satan's Storm. Texas is an ungodly kind of hot in June anyway. But on June 15th, 1960, the good people of Coperl became convinced that God had gone on vacation, that Satan was coming to town. In the meantime, according to weather historian Bill Murray, yes, that's really his name, but it's not the Bill Murray that you're thinking of. It was a standard early morning with the temperature hovering around 70 degrees Fahrenheit. There were a few clouds and a bit of heat lightning, but it wasn't unpleasant until, that is, the temperature skyrocketed. Within minutes, it reached more than 100, and some people even claimed that their thermometers burst when they couldn't register the extreme temperature change fast enough. Power failed. Some people awoke thinking their houses were on fire. Temperatures soared unofficially to around 140 degrees, according to the National Weather Service, and stayed that way for 3 hours. When it finally dropped, the farmers found that some cattle hadn't survived the intense heat. Worse, corn was seemingly cooked on the stalk, and the whole fields of cotton had withered and died. No one knew what it was at the time, but today we call it a heat burst. When air that's risen during a thunderstorm is pushed back down to earth, it's compressed and superheated. Usually the temperature on the ground level only rises about 20 degrees or so. But Coperl's 70-degree temperature change is an extreme case, and it's still called Satan's Storm for a good reason. These are just insane. Yeah, these are insane. So, all right, how about some relatively normal weather?
Really puts things in perspective.
It certainly does.
Miss Christina drives a 944. Satisfaction oozes from her pores. She keeps rings on her fingers, marble on her floor.
Why, who requested this?
I believe his name is, hold on 1 second. Nick's dad?
Ah!
Yeah.
That's David and David. That's actually one of my dad's favorite songs.
It's a great song.
It's a terrific song. Nick DiGilio continuing here until 4 o'clock. By the way, we're into the All-Star break now, so the Hawks won't play again until the beginning of February. So, yeah. So that's your little hockey update. Wildcard Wednesday, we'll do it again next week. It's Nick DiGilio here live in the Skyline Studio until 5. Tom Hush is producing. And we've been talking about weird weather events. So how about this? The super outbreaks of 1974 and 2011. We can all agree that tornadoes are terrifying. There's not much you can do other than watch them get closer and closer. One or two tornadoes is bad enough, but how about 148 of them? That's how many the National Weather Service counted touching down across 13 states on April 3rd and 4th in 1974. They were centered over the Ohio Valley, somehow claimed only 335 lives. There's nothing short of miraculous, especially considering one of the tornadoes hit just outside of Cincinnati. It's one of the costliest tornadoes in U.S. history all by itself. Adjusting for inflation, it caused somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.2 billion in damage. Business Insider shared some other terrifying things to take along for your nightmares. Some of the tornadoes were as wide as 5 miles, and 15 were simultaneously ravaging the same area at one point.
Where's Bill Paxton when you need
exactly.
him?
Exactly. She's turning green. If you think that's nuts, hold on. From April 25th to April 28th, 2011, the Weather Channel tracked another super outbreak that swept across the Deep South and up to Pennsylvania and New York. This one contained 349 tornadoes and did around $10.8 billion in damage, again killing more than 300 people. Multiple tornadoes hit the same areas repeatedly, all created by the perfect and deadly combination of warm, humid air at ground level, colder air above, and atmospheric wind shears. If it ever happened, if it never happens again, that'll be too soon. How about the Great Smog of London, December 5th, 1952? Isn't that like every day?
Yeah, but this one was right after Queen Lizzie was coronated.
In December of 1952, a new thing called rock and roll was on the radio, an anti-cyclone was over London. Briefly, according to the BBC, that means a pocket of air over the city was warm and full of moisture. Since surrounding air was cold, condensation started to form at ground level. Unfortunately for Londoners, that meant smog. The city was famous for it, thanks to coal fires of the heavy industry and countless homes, but this was something different. The anti-cyclone stayed in place for 5 days, collecting pollution and smothering Londoners like an angry god holding a pillow over your face. According to history, the smog covered an area of 30 miles wide. There was no wind to help disperse the pollution. A rotten egg smell was everywhere. It was so bad that some witnesses said that they couldn't even see their own feet. Boats couldn't navigate the Thames. Cars were abandoned. Londoners were forced to travel on foot across black slime that covered everything. Animals choked to death. Birds blindly flew into buildings and fell out of the sky, and crime rose. They couldn't even find a solace at the movies because they couldn't see the screen. Okay. Yeah, the next time we complain that it's raining, remember to tell us to shut up. So, hey, very excited. Tomorrow on the show, SNL alum and one of my favorites, Chris Kattan, is going to be here. He's doing the show at Zany's. And we'll tell you all about that. Plus, we'll talk about his great career and some of the more memorable characters that he did on SNL. He's one of my favorite cast members. I love him, and I'm very excited. So Chris Kattan will be on the show tomorrow.